I could call this meeting to order at 6 o'clock. Roll call.
Chairman Rosenblum.
Here.
Vice Chair Cushing Adams.
Here.
And Secretary Scheifele.
Here. I'd like to start the meeting off with a moment of silence for the passing of Dr. Griffin Delanus. He was a board member for 10 years, from 2002 to 2010. And he was chair of the Nashua Airport Authority for 5 years. Thank you. Any public input? Yes, sir.
Roger Manning, TriStar Aviation. I have a couple things I did not see on the agenda, and I think they're quite critical to a lot of people in the field here. One of them is through the grapevine that there's a runway grooving that's going to take place. It's already been approved, and money set aside for it. Melody?
You want me to answer?
Is it?
No.
No.
There's no runway grooving?
No, it hasn't been approved. It's not even, it's just in the discussion phase.
In the discussion phase?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was part of a CIP meeting with Gail and the manager.
And when are all the users going to find out about any loss of business for the runway being shut down?
Well, that'll all come about just like we did with paving, right? Yeah. That'll all be discussed as time, you know, it's off in the future. It's not anytime soon.
Not anytime soon.
It's off in the
future. And that's taken into the light that the it's been approved to seal the runway so that it'll extend its life. They're not going to groove it or reseal it and then groove it. How are they going to do that?
I think that's
if I could, Mr. Chair. The runway grooving, it's the project is grooving the runway, sealing it with a special emulsified product that they use on airport runways, and then remarking the runway. It's programmed in right now into our capital improvement plan for next year. So it would be FY18 after we get through the master plan and the pavement asphalt project this year. So the way things are shaking out right now, Eric, please feel free to step in here. We're planning on doing construction in the spring for the pavement, and then it would probably be the following summer after that we would start on that project.
On the ceiling.
Correct. Yeah.
Just out of curiosity, why do we have to groove the runway?
Well, it helps water evacuate off the runway. So it was something that a lot of our corporate operators are interested in having. It increases their performance in wet conditions.
Have any of them requested this formally?
Well, I don't know about formally, but yeah, they have.
They have.
Yeah, we had a meeting a couple years back, and that was one of the items that came out of that meeting with all of our corporate operators on the field.
And the corporate operators said that as long as you groove it, they'll come here. If you don't groove it, they ain't coming here.
Well, it's certainly an enhancement to the airport. It certainly does enhance the performance of their aircraft, and it makes it a more palatable airport. Yeah, absolutely.
Where I'm going with is this. We are not necessarily flushing cash, and we're going off doing things that we really don't need to do. There's no requirement FAA. There's no business loss. If we don't do it, I'm kind of wondering, should we really be doing that?
Well, if I might, Mr. Chair, or
I mean that's something that the CIP committee has reviewed and felt it was important to include the requirements and requests of other users of the airport. It is an enhancement. It is part of not a master plan, but the CIP plan. Whether we get funding for it or not, that's another story, and so the project may not continue, but we'll have to see where we go. But I think it's personally a worthwhile project in order to enhance the value of the airport.
I think a lot could change by then. It's just in a discussion phase, right? It could get funding, could not.
Yeah, and just for clarification, the pavement rejuvenator that we're talking about applying is to extend the life of the pavement, to extend it beyond what it's reasonably expected to start to deteriorate. We're at the point now where we reconstructed it back in 2011, and you know, you start to see signs of aging, and the rejuvenator is to extend it out beyond its useful life. So it's a good thing. The grooving is strongly recommended for the types of aircrafts that are used on this facility, so I would say that it is strongly recommended by the FAA. FAA doesn't use word like requirements, it uses recommendations if you want to take funds from them. And we're looking at minimizing, in the project we would look at options to minimize the operational downtime to the users. Things like potentially doing it at night are being investigated as an option, things of that nature, when there's not a lot of traffic on the airfield.
And the grooving is going to take place before the resealing.
You can do it both. It's strongly recommended by both the grooving company and the reseal and the people who apply the resealant to be done afterwards.
The resealing.
Correct. After. It's not a resealing. It's a pavement rejuvenator.
Rejuvenator.
How much of the runway will get grooved?
The entire runway length and approximately 80% of the width.
One other item I didn't see on the agenda also, it was out of the National Telegraph about a $2 million grant for the repaving of the taxiways and also for updating the master plan. I didn't see it anywhere in the agenda tonight. I think it's a rather important item that's going to affect a lot of people in this room. I have the article right here. Anybody would like to read it?
Yeah. No?
Yeah. The agenda is put together at least a week before the meeting, and I think that came out sort of afterwards.
16th of September, sir.
Yeah. So you have a valid point. We did get a grant, and you want to talk about
that? Yeah, well, we plan on talking about it in the airport engineer's report. That's when that item comes up. So that's later on in the agenda.
Are you looking forward to anybody else?
Okay. Thank you. Next is a presentation from our corporate counsel for the City of Nashua, Steve Bolton. Discussion about the RSA Chapter 91-A, New Hampshire's Right to Know Law.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You want me to go any place in particular?
Front and center.
Well, I got some material. I'll give you a few extra copies. You don't have to look at this now. This doesn't necessarily follow with my presentation. Okay. But it's some reference material, so when I'm not here, you may be able to take a look at. But let's start with a little about myself, because some of you may not know me. I've been a practicing attorney in New Hampshire for 35 years. Early in my career, I was in the city attorney's office for Nashua. I was deputy city attorney in 1982. Became city attorney in 1984, and then in 1987, when I was young, perhaps no less foolish, I left that position, and earlier this year I returned to it. In the interim, I represented municipalities, I represented developers, I represented labor unions, I represented management who resisted labor unions, represented individuals, and I represented businesses. So I was pretty much all over the map. While doing that, I also served for 5 years on the Nashua Board of Education and for 12 years on the Board of Aldermen. So I've had a lot of experience with the city of Nashua and a lot of experience with the legal profession. So I don't come here entirely without experience, but as far as the airport goes, I am the least knowledgeable person in the room. So let's start with that. You're subject, the airport authority is subject to the right to know law. There is no question about that, and I can go into further detail about why that is so if there's any question, but it is a municipal agency, and it's subject to its requirements. What do those requirements mean? One, your meetings have to be public. When you have a meeting, you have to post notices of it in advance, 48 hours in advance. You ought to do it longer than that, but that's the minimum. Two public places, one of which can be on your website. You can post it in more places if you want, and sometimes that's a good idea. So you can post it at City Hall or at the library, at your main building, at the FBO building, wherever you think people are going to see it. More postings, the better. At least two, one of which can be on your website. What's a meeting? A meeting is when a majority of the body, in this case that's the airport authority, and a majority is two, get together to discuss matters within your jurisdiction. Primarily that means anything to do with the airport. It may be anything to do with the leases to businesses, either inside Perimeter Road or outside Perimeter Road. Anything that is subject to the jurisdiction of the body, if you get together and discuss it, any two of you, that's a meeting. If it hasn't been posted in advance, you're in violation of the law. Except purely social meetings, purely social get-togethers are not a meeting if they're not convened for the purpose of discussing matters within your jurisdiction. So if along with other people you happen to be at the same Christmas party, and then one says to the other, hey, I'll see you at the meeting next week, don't panic, no one's going to jail, no one's getting sued, or at least no one's getting sued and losing, you're okay. But don't say, hey, let's get together for breakfast, let's go to Merrimack because we don't want anyone to see us, and let's talk about the runway and grooving the pavement. Don't do that. Town of Sandwich, New Hampshire, lost a case where the selectmen and zoning board of adjustment were doing things like that. The other side, who were opposed to some variance or special exception that was granted to a property owner, ended up suing. They won. That is, the abutters opposed to the special exception by the zoning board won. They not only got the decision of the zoning board reversed, some decisions of the Board of Selectmen reversed, they got an order for the town to pay over $200,000 in their attorney's fees. This is a small town. $200,000 would be a big number here. It is a huge number in Sandwich. Don't get together and have meetings that are not posted and not open to the public. Yeah, meeting, you have to have it posted, it has to be open to the public. You have to have minutes taken of the meeting. Minutes have to say what board members, what authority members in this case, are in attendance, what subject matter was discussed, and what decisions were made. That's the requirement. Many places take more extensive minutes. The Board of Aldermen, for example, in the city of Nashua, basically records the minutes, and someone takes it down virtually word for word from those recordings, and that's their minutes. Minutes have to be available for public inspection within 5 business days. That's 5 business days after the meeting. Not after the subsequent meeting when you approve the minutes. So So you can call the initial minutes that are available within 5 days. You can call them draft minutes. You can call them unapproved minutes. You can qualify it in some way. They have to be available within 5 business days. At your next meeting, if you want to revise them, you can call that revised version approved minutes or final minutes or whatever appropriate terminology you wish to adopt. It's recommended that you keep the initial draft minutes and the revised minutes, both as public documents available for public inspection. There are other things that aren't meetings. If you want to meet with legal counsel, myself, someone in my office, another one of the attorneys that work with me, or you can hire outside counsel if your budget permits. Those meetings, you can meet on your premises, at the attorney's office, wherever. You don't need to post. You don't need minutes. It's not a meeting. When you are in a meeting, you can go into non-public sessions for 5, I think it's now 6, enumerated purposes, and those are in the materials I've given you. Some of those are to discuss a matter which may negatively reflect on the reputation of some person who is not a member of the body. So if one of you have some embarrassing thing and you want to talk about, unfortunate. If you want to talk about some other person and your discussion might be negatively reflecting on their reputation, you can take a vote to go into non-public session. Has to be a motion, has to be seconded, has to be a recorded roll call vote. You can then, you do this at the end of a meeting, you can do it at the beginning of the meeting. Meeting still has to be posted. It has to be started at the right time. But you can then tell anyone who's there, you have to go into a non-public session. You have to leave. We'll call you when we're back. You can discuss the situation regarding this person who may or may not have their reputation impacted. And you can come out of non-public session. You can keep the minutes of the non-public session confidential. It's often called sealing the minutes. I recommend you discuss whether you want to do that before you come out of non-public session. Seems to me that if you're going to say, well, we have to keep these minutes confidential because we've all said things that defeat the purpose of having gone into non-public session if we just, you know, have the minutes become public. Discuss it, decide what you want to do. Come out of non-public session. You can do that by vote. Vote's not required, but it sort of keeps it straight, I think. It keeps it, everyone knows what's going on. So you have a clear delineation when you've come out of non-public session. You invite the public back in. You want to keep the minutes confidential. At that point, you have to have a motion, 2/3, in your case, 2/3 and a majority are the same thing. You have to have a 2/3 majority in order to keep the minutes confidential. Again, a roll call vote. At such time as the need to keep the minutes confidential no longer exists, you can vote to make them public. Other reasons for non-public session: considering hiring, firing, or disciplining an employee. Purchases. You're going to purchase additional land to extend the runway or to extend the flight path, or you're going to purchase aviation easements, something like that. You're negotiating. You can go into non-public session for that, because obviously if you lay your cards out on the table and say, we'd really like to get this for $200,000, but God, if we could talk them into $150,000, we could spend that $50,000 somewhere else. You're allowed to have those kinds of discussions in non-public session. Same rules apply. Discuss whether you need to keep it confidential. In that scenario, you obviously do. Come out of non-public session. make the vote when you're back in public session. Interestingly enough, in the case where you've gone into non-public session, if you don't vote to keep the minutes confidential, the minutes have to be available in 72 hours. That's not business days. That's 72 hours. So I didn't write the law. I wouldn't have written it that way. If you have a meeting on Friday, 72 hours is going to come pretty quick when Monday rolls around. That's where you are. One of the things I've included in the materials I've passed out to you is a memorandum that my office put together, not very long, it's 5 pages, 4.5 pages, double-spaced, which talk about using email. Statute particularly requires you can't get around these public meeting requirements by using sequential means of communication. You can't use electronic means of communication in ways that subvert it as well. So you can't have telephone conferences where you get on the phone, because that would be a meeting, you're discussing airport business, and the public's not invited, the public's not listening. So you can't do that. What you also can't do is sort of sequential communications by email. And this happens quite a bit, and most of the time it's well-meaning, it's completely inadvertent. People may even think they're being open, and they're being open to their other board, authority, or committee members by whenever you say something to one person, you're saying it to all of them. The problem is you've now got, if you do this by email, and if there's some back and forth, you're now discussing matters within your authority. It's going out to everyone, so it's a majority, and the public is not listening in. Can't do it. There's been no notice. The public's not invited. It circumvents the statute. This was actually one of the problems in the sandwich case that I mentioned, which has got them a $200,000 liability. So you can read what we had to say about that. The chairman, the manager of the authority, clerical support, they want to send out notices of meetings to all members, of notices of things of interest to all members. That's fine, but try not to get into the habit of just clicking on your email, reply to all, and saying, let me tell you what I think about that. Because all of a sudden now you're discussing matters within your authority, it's going to all members, et cetera, et cetera. Your records are also public documents subject to the right to know law. So if someone comes, wants a copy of a report, it's a draft report that the authority hasn't seen yet, that is not subject to disclosure. If it's personnel records involving health or health insurance or sensitive information about use of sick leave or reasons why someone has been granted an extended leave of absence, discipline of an employee, that's not subject to disclosure. Salaries, work schedule, those are subject to disclosure. General reports on the condition of the field, on future plans, if they've been seen by the authority, particularly if they've been adopted by the authority, subject to disclosure. There's some material about that in what I've provided to you as well. There are, as I said, there are exceptions for confidential information. There are exceptions for testing of employees. You know, if you got a standard test you give, you don't have to give up the questions in advance just because someone asked for them. So those are mentioned as well. Any questions arise at any time, mostly during business hours, call my office. I've provided each of you with a card. You'd speak to me. You can speak to either of the other two attorneys, Dory Clark or Celia Leonard, in the Corporation Counsel office. They are as well-versed as I am on the right-to-know law, which is what 91A is commonly called. There will be nuances. Someone makes a request for information. If you've got it right at hand, you have to give it to them. It's available immediately. You charge them for copies, 10 cents, 25 cents a copy, whatever it actually costs to produce the copies. Not allowed to charge for the time it takes the staff to go and look it up and so forth and say, well, you know, $20 an hour for a minimum of 2 hours to retrieve a page. You're not allowed to do that. Actual cost of copying, no staff time. If they ask for something, they want a report in a certain format, broken down by year for a number of years, how many landings by propeller planes, how many landings by jet planes month by month for the last 5 years. If you've got it, you've got it, you give it to them. If you don't have it, you don't have to create it. You don't have to put, you know, 8 different things together and spend a day looking things up for them to give it to them in the format they want. If it's available in records and they want to spend the time, you can make mention of that to them. This is where you would go to look for it. Do you want to look at that? Do you want a copy of that? You're talking about getting 5,000 pages worth of copying. Even at 10 cents a page, you're looking into expense. So that's fine. Anyway, if any one of you, and even the audience, I suppose, if that's all right, Mr. Chair. If you have questions, I'm available to try and answer them.
I have questions.
Yes, sir.
Following the multiple articles in the Telegraph about exchange of emails, et cetera, from the school board, and some of the vinegar that was going between the members, I started getting very nervous on this subject matter. As you see, we are a board of 3. We are normally a board of 5, and hopefully next month we will be back to a board of 5. There is a tremendous amount of stuff that goes on at this airport that has to be discussed. And my concern is that if all of it boils down to we have to wait tonight to talk about it here, we'll be here until tomorrow morning. I addressed this to Alderman LeBron during one of our meetings, and I said, how does the Board of Aldermen do business? You certainly don't walk in blindfolded to the board meeting and then discuss everything that needs to be discussed. How do you deal with this?
Well, one of the things is the Board of Aldermen has meetings almost every night, 4 nights a week, either of the full board or the various committees. I'm not recommending that to anyone.
Thank you.
You can receive information. So your airport manager could send material out to all of you and say, we've just received this response from the FAA pursuant to our request for funding. Please look it over. It will be on the agenda for the next meeting. Well, we've just received this report from the engineering firm we've hired to look into this issue or that issue. So all the information can be disseminated to you in advance. You can't discuss it among each other to the extent it's a quorum. So at this point, you only have 3. It means you can't discuss it with either of the other persons because that's a majority. Right? When you're up to 5, I suppose any 2 of you could discuss it, but you've got to be careful not to set up something where it is sequential conversations intended to get around the law. So it's not, well, person A conveys information to person B in a conversation at 1 o'clock. And then person B discusses the same information, including person A's opinion, with person C at 2:30. And now person C talks to person D. You get the idea. That is not going to get by the requirements of the law. So, yeah, any two of you happen to get together, did you get the report? Yeah, I got the report. Well, what do you think? This is what I think. But you got to leave it there. If either of you then brings in a third person and conveys a similar conversation and similar discussion, you're running afoul of the law. Now, if that becomes known, it's a violation. If someone sues, the action you take as a result of those discussions may be nullified. Someone sues successfully under the right to know law, they can have their court costs paid. If the body was unreasonable, certainly if it knowingly violated the law, attorney's fees can be awarded. So you want to avoid that. It does make it more difficult. There is no question about it.
I'm not trying to beat this to death, but for example, the chairman sends out a request, a notice that a proposed agenda to the two of us.
Yes.
He's communicating with the entire board. Is that a violation? Is it?
Yeah. I'm going to say no, but it's iffy, right? These are the things that are going to be discussed. That's probably okay. What won't be okay is, these are the things that's going to be discussed. I don't think it will take too long because we're going to get rid of item three right off because that guy's just in here on his usual out of left field notion. Something like that that conveys an opinion, how the chair expects anyone else to vote, how the chair is going to vote himself. That gets into the realm of discussion of the subject matter, which is what's in your jurisdiction. Strictly the bare agenda, we're going to, you know, notice of the meeting. We're going to meet on this day at this time. These are the topics that we're going to be discussing. That is probably okay. And I think if you do that, you'll at least be acting in good faith.
Okay. Would it be okay to have the airport manager send that out?
Absolutely.
One more.
Yes.
This, New Hampshire DOT is our FAA. We deal with them, not the FAA directly. Okay. So they call a meeting. They did call a meeting at the engineer's office to review a major project that's on the books. And two of us were present. This was not a, we're going to change it, we're making decisions, etc. It was to review the project with the state FAA. To refine some issues. Are we in violation here?
There we go, question. I'm going to say just showing up and listening to a presentation, no. Participating, giving your opinion, yes.
It's tricky.
That would be in this instance where we have a three-member board right now.
Right.
If we had a five-member board,
that
would
be
a problem.
Yeah. Any two out of five, not a problem. But three out of five,
yeah.
Same problem.
What about two out of four? Same problem?
That's a problem.
No, technically not, because it's not a majority, not a quorum.
We were a four-member board at the time.
Okay, that's right.
So you'd have to get to three.
We're not going to jail this particular time.
You don't go to jail, but significant money... The sandwich case is sort of the extreme, but we don't want to challenge the record at any time.
Since emails become such an interesting aspect of this, in the private sector, we live in the world of Sarbanes-Oxley. Is the airport obligated to retain all of these emails for any particular period of time, and are they subject to the right to know law?
Well, one, don't have meetings that don't have meetings by way of email, because right there it's in violation. If any two privately send emails to one another, you're not going to have a record of it anyway. Only those two people are going to have a record, and it's sort of their private conversation. So I would say no. But if somehow...
The airport maintains the emails for all the board members.
Yeah, that's... If...
Not mine.
if you've got it, don't destroy it. Keep it for 5 years at least. And if someone asks, it's there. There's something sensitive that would otherwise, within the emails, deal with something that's employee discipline, for example. Then you don't have to disclose it. You want to keep it just for other reasons. You get a request for it, call my office and we'll evaluate, help you evaluate on a case-by-case basis.
Farrell Hills, for the record. So if my memory is correct, one of the Telegraph articles that talked about the National Board of Education, I believe that article said that someone made a right to know request for email communication between those board members, and thence it came out that they were discussing, they were essentially having a meeting via email. And so that's when that thing blew up. Is that correct? Is that your recollection? Because that would suggest that email communication is public.
Email communication that is part of the records of an organization. They're records just like anything else. They're records, and they can be requested the right to know law and can be got. The superintendent had a request for every email he received over an approximate 6-month period from any member of the Board of Education. And that created a stack about that high. He and I went through them page by page to determine whether there was anything in the emails that should be kept confidential. So anything about employee discipline, student discipline, identifying information about students, particularly special needs students, any pending court cases, whatever would qualify for an exception or an exemption under the right to know law, and was important to keep confidential. We weren't looking for things necessarily, but we weren't going to disclose things that it was important not to disclose. So we went through all that, and then whatever was required to be made public, we made public. So the same thing would be true here. If we had a whole series of emails on a myriad subjects, from the airport manager to one or more members of the authority, and those were in the normal course of business, saved as they should be, they would be subject to disclosure unless there was another exception or exemption that applied. And that's exactly what happened in the Board of Education. It also happened to reveal that there were a lot of emails from one member of the board to the superintendent, copying every other member of the board, conversations, email conversations between board members that copied every other member of the board, and that was one of the impetuses for us to generate this little memorandum recommending against that practice.
Did you find anything of Hillary's?
We were not asked to weigh in on that.
Any other questions?
I have some questions. Okay. So in our bylaws, it says here that you can call a special meeting and it gives the reasons. And in our bylaws it says, at such special meeting, no business shall be considered other than as designated in the notice. But if all the directors of the authority are present at the special meeting, any and all business may be transacted at such special meeting. So we can say we're going to call a special meeting for this purpose, and then we can talk about whatever we want?
Well, your bylaws suggest that. And, in fact, the right to know law doesn't specify that the public has a right to know all of the items that will be discussed at a particular meeting. It's not a bad practice to, along with the notice, maybe on the same piece of paper, meeting will be had at this time, and this is the agenda. But you don't have to do this. You can say, meeting of the Nashua Airport Authority, September 21st, 2016, 6 p.m. in room 100. And that would be sufficient for the notice requirement. You can put the agenda, you're giving more information, but once the meeting is convened, the right to know law doesn't say anything about what you can discuss, except where you go into non-public session. You have to make the motion, you have to say why you're going in, and then once you're in non-public session, you can only discuss that announced purpose. And
okay, so non-public, we can only discuss that. So this is just in a...
Well, that's your own bylaws.
Okay.
If you were going to call a special meeting and give notice, you have to post the fact that you're having a special meeting 24 hours in advance. If there's some dire emergency and you've got to get together to make a decision and 24 hours is not soon enough, you can meet. The chairman has to make a notation about the fact that it's an emergency, special meeting, proper notice. There was not sufficient time to give proper notice, and you've got to do what you can. So you call the newspaper, you call the radio stations, you call Channel 9, and you try and disseminate publicly the fact that there's going to be an emergency special meeting. And at that point, you probably want to say what it's for. We just received word that there's a particular emergency that has to be dealt with, and whatever that emergency is. So you have 24 hours notice in advance in an emergency of a special meeting. If you can't even do that, you do the best you can to get the word out. You notify the other authority members. You get everyone here. And then you're limited to that emergency function. Right? But in your general situation, no, you can... You know, something has come up the day before, it wasn't on the agenda, but it's important for the information to be provided. If it's the kind of thing that can be provided publicly, if you get into the discussion, you do what you have to do. If it doesn't require action immediately, it's good to carry it over and let the word get out so you can get public input. But if it does, if it's, hey, we've got this unique opportunity, we're going to be able to get money, so instead of us paying to roof the pavement, someone else is going to pay it all. You know, if we wait, it's going to be a 60-40 situation. If we act now, it's going to be a 90-10 situation. You're allowed to go ahead and do it. It's anyone wants to know any details, you know, the records are public, everything's public, but you can take that action.
That's my next question. So how long do the records have to be kept public? Like, I know Steve posts them on the website, and we have recordings. But how long do those need to be there or accessible, or the recordings, when do they go away?
Once, if you use recordings to prepare the minutes, once the minutes are prepared, the recordings can be recycled, essentially. Typically what happens is your recording situation, this used to be more true when you did everything on audio tape, and now with you know, more electronic and more sophisticated stuff, your capacity is better. But it used to be people would use the same cassette tape, and you know, after they had taken the minutes down, made a transcription from the tape, then they'd either erase those tapes or just put them back in the box to be reused at further meetings. The law hasn't quite caught up with that, so you can actually erase the audio recording after you've prepared the written version and keep recycling the tapes.
We voted to have the minutes recorded and made, you know, people wanted to hear them. So even after the minutes are approved, they can be destroyed?
Yes.
Should they be left off?
I don't believe that's a wise practice, but yes.
Yeah.
Depends what your sophistication is on your recording equipment. If you've got great capacity, keep them for a long time. If you've got, you know, if it's going to be an expense, then after a period of time, recycle them back. But I wouldn't say as a matter of practice, destroy them just because you can. Or erase them just because you can.
Okay.
keep them until you need to reuse the medium again. Minutes, I believe, and this is another statute, it's records retention, and I can provide specific information on that if anyone wants to get in touch. But I believe minutes of meetings, the written version, I believe it's 5 years. There's often reasons why, aside from records retention law, that you would want to keep things longer than that. Certainly any records of acquisition of property or something you want to keep virtually forever.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
You want to stay for the rest of the meeting? They're fine.
I actually have another engagement, so if you'll excuse me.
Thank you, sir.
I'm going to take my leave.
Thank you.
Thank you for hosting me.
I just want to report to the public that the RSA that we've just been discussing is 132 pages. And it's nice to get a synopsis of what's in there. It's been challenging for a three-person board to adhere to right-to-know law, but we're very sensitive, and we make every attempt to be transparent in all of our actions, and we'll continue that.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye, all.
Thank you. You want the floor?
Yeah. I'm sort of the guy that instigated this, and the reason why is because I started getting nervous after I read the RSA two or three times, and then the article that appeared in the newspaper came out loud and clear. There's an awful lot of moving parts going on here at this airport, and there has been some criticism from you folks that, you know, the board doesn't do anything. And I want you to know that we're pedaling quite as fast as we can. And sometimes I find myself, hold it, stop, you can't do that. You got to back up and wait to hear. And then it means another 30 days before we get some solid action on it. So I just wanted you to know that the board will be reconstituted through five, probably next month. And the activities that go on at this board are extremely open. I mean, everything that we do is recorded, it's published, it's open, it's on the website, it's available. Anybody has a question, the files are open. There's nothing that is going on behind the scenes, but it is extremely challenging for us not to talk to one another about stuff that goes on in the airport. That needs to be talked about, and wait to get here to do it. And as I say, you know, we'll be here all night if that's what we have to do.
Thank you.
Yes, Wes. Wes Liu for the recording. I'd like to observe that in the last 3 years that I've participated, the board has gotten much better at this. And I think that we appreciate your efforts. But I'd also like to note that none of us will be offended if you publish that you're going to have a meeting every week.
You're going to have five more openings here for you.
Six.
Just want to comment on the fact that we have two new guys soon. That's going to make a big difference. Because, Bob, you asked, how do we do it in the Board of Aldermen on the boards? And Attorney Bolton was correct. We meet nearly every night. There's always something going on, so there's all kinds of conversations. But being a 15-member board, there's a lot of phone calls and meeting in the hallways where people talk. We prepare. We do homework. We prepare. I'm not saying you guys don't, but that's how we do it. We get the packet that comes out in advance. We read that legislation. We research it. We do our homework. And then we come in ready to talk. And then we also... that's of a particular concern. If I have some legislation that's a particular concern, I'll call up some of the guys and say, hey, this is what I'm doing. What do you think? And they'll ask a couple questions. We'll have a conversation, but it's just the two of us. And I think that would be acceptable if, as long as we don't try to make it into a string meeting, but have a conversation when there's five, you know, call, talk to each other. I think that that will speed things. You can't make any decisions there. You can say, but you have to have the conversation. It's almost like it's somewhat rehearsed. We don't want to imply that it's scripted, but it's not. At least going into a meeting, I might know what someone down the horseshoe is going to say on a particular issue. He might know what I'm going to say. The other night, we all sort of knew. Everyone looked at me. It's my turn to talk. And all of that. So we knew those things occur. But we don't do it with majority. And I think the email thing is a point very well taken. That's where the school board really got in trouble. I think they did too much by email, and then they copied everybody. And that certainly don't want it. It'll go better when you have five.
Thank you. So.
This is more directed at Farrell Woods, for the record. No, it's more directed at Dave. Do you find yourself communicating via phone a whole lot more than, say, email?
I do very little by email. At this stage, there's not as much as there was in the beginning, because in the beginning, I didn't know. I didn't know how the whole process was going to work, and a lot of it was, hey, how does this work? How are we going to do this? Because I didn't know what the processes were. Once the processes are a little better outlined, I might get a text from someone, say, what do you think about such and such? I don't think that's such a good idea, whatever. So we do it by text, it's very brief, or by phone call, not typically by email. I think, I don't want to lay out a big argument in an email. It takes too much time. It's much easier to do it verbally.
I did have a question I forgot to ask, and maybe we can make a note, maybe you want to call me. But if we are gathering information for something that we are not voting on, we don't necessarily have jurisdiction over. Like I talked before about having a meeting with different airport authority members just to, see how they do things. An information gathering session. I didn't even think about how many of us can be there.
Well, as you said, if we have more than we have a quorum, we have a meeting.
Yeah.
That's a meeting.
Yeah.
So any information gathering, no matter what, we can't really.
Right. So we have to communicate as to who's going to that meeting.
Andy, Nines, for the record, on this flowchart that Bolton passed out, it says one of the things says was the meeting convert or was the group put together, was it convened for the purpose of discussing or acting on matters over which the body has supervision? No. And then the question is, were decisions nevertheless made on any such matters? Well, if you didn't make any decisions, then it becomes no violation. So if you happen to run into each other in Sandy's restaurant, for instance, you weren't getting together for at least the way it seems, you're not getting together to discuss anything as long as no decisions were made. Even if you discuss something at that point in time, it would be okay. Just so you don't make a decision seems to be the key.
Well, I don't think it says that, though. It says, was it convened for the purpose? And if it was, well, if you bump into each other, that's something.
Yeah.
But if you say, hey, let's have breakfast, and that's a...
Yeah, and but you're discussing something, but you didn't make any decision on it. I think that falls into the no violation circle.
Yeah, but it says, was it convened for the purpose of discussing or acting upon matters over which the board has supervision, control, jurisdiction, or advisory powers? If the answer was yes, even though no decisions were made, then it's a meeting.
Well, if it's yes, it falls right into the it's a meeting and you must comply.
Right.
If the answer is no, then you go into the point of are you making a decision or not? If you're not making the decision, then it seems to be okay.
So if we all ran into each other in the mall and we decided to sit down in one of the booths and have a cup of coffee and talk about the airport, it wasn't a convened meeting. It's not, no decisions are being made, so that would be a no.
That's how I determine it. I don't think this is restrictive as it might first appear in the way he was talking. As long as you're not making decisions out of the public eye, it seems to be his documentation seems to fall there.
Farrell and then Dave.
I would be a little bit careful about that, because I think the example that was brought up was, hey, Sandy, what do you think of this? you may not come to a decision on anything, but you're, you might be discussing some matter of substance. I think what works in your scenario is dissemination of information. It's like, here's information from the FAA on X. Here you go.
Eric, when we have these meetings to discuss construction and...
it's only one of us can...
What are we going to cut out to bring down the budget or the cost or et cetera, et cetera? What I'm hearing is that since you're asking for decisions, only one of us could be there. That's not a board decision. We would have to bring it back to the board.
Typically in construction and also design projects, what you guys end up doing was allocating Steve or the airport manager to make the day-to-day decisions that are necessary in the course of a project. And then anything that's financial or relevant concern to the general public goes back to the board for decisions. But okay. You know, whether or not we move a sign or 5 feet to the left or right is not a decision that needs to come back to the board.
Okay.
So that's typically how we've operated in the past, and it's worked great. I mean, that's why you have an airport manager, quite frankly, is to make sure okay. the projects that are here and the airport functions.
Good. Makes sense.
Okay. Let's move on, but Dave, you had your hand up.
I was going to say that there's really no problem until someone makes a request, until someone sees the five of you involved having a cup of coffee, and then wants to know what you're talking about. And then someone says, oh, we're talking a little bit about airport, and someone else says, oh, we didn't talk about anything. And then, you know, now it becomes an issue. And there's an old maxim about avoiding any hint of impropriety. And I think that's probably the safe thing to do. It may seem cumbersome. If we had a larger authority, more than five, then you can get three people together. Because three people can have a meaningful conversation and really come to some resolution. You can do some decent brainstorming. But we can't do that here. So you can only have two people, and two people isn't as much of a good brainstorm. Maybe we should be seven members.
And I know this board has made every attempt not to convene together, and even when they're together, they disseminate. So.
Like, I don't let Mike eat in the restaurant anymore.
Okay, I like
to... It's hard. It's hard.
Okay. I'd like to move on. I asked the secretary to include on every agenda the mission statement of the authority, so it's always going to be on the top there to remind us why we are here. I would ask the secretary to discuss the minutes.
We did not meet in August, so we have the minutes for the month of July, and I make a motion to approve the minutes for the July 2016 board meeting.
I'll second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Okay, motion carries. Okay, treasurer's report. You have in your packet the July...
I have a question in a minute before we leave that subject. It was discussed when Ms. Bolt was here about recordings. What is our policy? Is there an official policy of how long I can keep recordings?
There's no official policy at this point. At this point, we have everything that we've ever recorded on the website, and we'll continue it until we
I don't think it's all there.
No. Everything that we've recorded since I've been here, we have. It's
right.
Not all on the website, but we certainly have it.
Okay, since we started recording.
Well, we started recording decades ago. I mean, using tape recorders, so I would have to say no, that's not true.
Okay.
But when we voted to make it public on the website, like to provide that, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. And how far back do you have those other recordings?
To 2013, March of 13.
Okay. And they're all up there, and people. So we don't have a policy as to when we're going to.
They're not all on the website, no.
But
we have a year or
but
so.
But they're available.
Last year, the last 12 months is on the website.
Yeah, right.
The last 12 months are
yeah.
on there. But what about the ones before?
They're stored.
Yeah. Okay, so we have them somewhere. If somebody wanted them to listen to the recording.
Is there any minutes prior to 2013?
Recordings?
Recordings.
Not that I'm aware of. I don't know where they.
We could ask Shirley that, but I don't believe they saved the recording minutes.
No, I don't think they did.
So but we have at least 3 years worth of recordings.
But more than that in writing.
But we have the minutes from prior.
Yeah, we save all the minutes forever and ever, right?
So is there any kind of, will it be a 12-month rolling kind of thing on the website, or is it just going to be from the time that you all decided to have the recordings on the website from then into perpetuity until such time as we discover there's a memory issue, then you'll deal with it?
I think we're going to look at that, and we'll have to evaluate it, and we'll come back. Let's put that as the agenda item for next month.
Thanks.
Good point. Okay, so we have the Treasurer's Report. You have July and August together. We're going to refer to the August financials, the comparison of actual to budget. That starts on page 31, I guess it is. The fuel flowage fees are higher year-to-date by about $2,000. And the parking, tie-down parking, is about $1,200 under budget. We have total revenue budget of $78,180. We've collected actual of $79,000, so that's $825 to the good. On the expense side, all of our expenses are within budget. We're a bit under budget on the wages by $2,500 year to date. The total expenses is actual is the budget is $82,737 and the actual is $73,827. So we have a surplus, operating surplus of $5,100. We had projected a budget shortfall of $4,500, so about $10,000 better than we had expected at this point. In addition, we received a check of $26,333. And I'd like to recognize kudos to our secretary, our office manager, Mary Beth, who pursued, that was a reimbursement of health insurance from the New Hampshire retirement system. The authority has been paying health insurance premiums on a former airport manager's spouse, and she was able to determine that we were entitled to some of that as a rebate because the retirement system should have paid some of that. So we were able to collect going back how many years?
Six years. Back to 2006, so it's been a bit
long. So thank you for that
there's
hard
more
work.
I can go back farther. As long as I can find the records, I can get more.
So we're currently paying about half of the cost of the monthly expense.
Right, correct. $236 a month we're going to get every month going forward as well.
So when you add that into the mixture, we're a surplus of $31,700. So we're pretty good cash wise at this point.
Okay.
I'd like to make a motion to accept the August 31st financials of 2016 pending audit.
One second.
Questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries. Thank you.
Aye.
Yes, Andy.
Just a quick question. The numbers you were doing, was that only for the month of August, or was that for year-to-date?
That was year-to-date.
Because
I figured that July and August we can combine the two for the financials. Next on the agenda is the communications.
We have two communications. One is from the Nashua City Beautification Committee, and they were going to speak tonight, but they're not. We're going to put it forward, so we'll just hold that one. And the other one, the second one, is from Stein Realty on the subject of removing underground storage tanks. These tanks are to be will be removed, and the cost will be borne by Department of Environmental Services. Mm-hmm. DES really wants to get these tanks out of the ground. I don't believe there's any discussion on whether it should or shouldn't be done.
We'll need a motion to...
I make a motion that we approve and give DES the green light to remove those tanks.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Discussion?
I think perhaps your motion might want to give Stein Realty the permission to proceed, since they're the one making the request.
Okay. I modify the motion to give Stein Realty the approval to remove the underground storage tanks.
Do we have to wait a certain amount of time? I'm from Kim Gilbert from Stein Realty. Or can I basically give them a call tomorrow and get things in motion?
I think if this motion passes, you're entitled to do it immediately. Yeah.
Question?
Yes, Andy.
Andy Nias, for the record, just a question about the removal of the tanks. Are they going to put the property back to the grade level that it's at now and so forth, put fill in and et cetera, or are they just going to take it out and leave a hole?
You know, Peter, he's a little frugal. I think he's going to leave a hole.
You want to address that?
So MPRO is going to be the folks that are going to be doing the removal, and they will bring it back to level with the rocks, as far as everything that I've been told. Status quo, remove less of the tank.
There'll be minimal disruption to that area for other tenants?
Yes, so I will notify anybody that's in 105. There's only, I believe, three hangers that could possibly affect it. MPRO notified me that their work shouldn't disrupt them being able to get in and out. The confinement is between our two buildings.
I have a question. I looked at the site, and I noticed that the area is gravel. That's where they're probably going to dig down and take the tanks out. What about all those big tanks that are around it, the containers, etc.? Is there nothing involved with that? They stay there, no change?
Yeah, as far as I know, there shouldn't be any change, other than we will have to remove stuff that's immediate.
Okay.
But the green storage container should...
They're not part of the removal process. Okay. We have a motion.
So there's a motion on the floor to allow Stein Realty to go ahead and remove the fuel farm on 99 Perimeter. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. You don't have to stay if you don't want.
You can read the minutes.
Okay, let's go to the reports. We have a tower report that was included in the packet. And we want to report that the July and August showed a increase in traffic. 14% increase in July and a 6% increase in August. So overall, we're up 13% for the year with 39,707. Airport manager's report.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Wildlife activity on the airport has been light with no reported strikes. We do have a lot of geese that are overflying the airport every morning around 10 a.m. There's about 200 of them every day, and then they fly back in the afternoon. They are the same ones. They're very punctual, and they cross at midfield, which is probably the best place for them to cross. As long as somebody's not doing a planned low approach, they shouldn't be a factor. But we keep an eye on it. They don't land at the airport, so there's not a lot we can do.
No tail feathers.
The Gorefield movie night and Wings and Wheels were very successful. The events brought approximately 4,000 people to the airport. Collectively, for Wings and Wheels, they donated approximately 850 pounds of food to the organization known as End 68 Hours of Hunger. We are working through the process for the removal of trees on Sharon Ave, which will allow the VOR-32 approach to be utilized at night. The trees are located on city property in a wetland buffer. Appeared before the Conservation Commission on the 6th. The Alderman showed them in there, and we'll be going before the Zoning Board of Adjustment on October 6th. And a sitewalk is scheduled for October 6th, and Zoning Board of Adjustment is next Tuesday. We had the Sierra Owners and Pilots Association conduct one of their proficiency training programs here at the airport. It was very well received. There are about 30 aircraft here, and they will be back next year. Also, the American Bonanza Society, the September 15th through 18th, they had approximately 20 Beechcraft Bonanzas attending. And we're looking forward to September 24 and 25. We're supposed to have the Northeast Chapter of the International Comanche Society here, again, conducting pilot proficiency training. So it's we've had a lot of these groups come and utilize the airport and in add to our operations numbers, which is great. In July, Chair Rosenblum and I met with Greater Nashua Chamber of Commerce and made a presentation about the airport and answered their questions. We've made some positive inroads because of that meeting. I met with Mike Appelberg of the United Way, Nashua United Way, to learn about how the airport can help with their cause. Also met with Thomas Bishop of BAE Systems, who their aircraft utilize the airport quite frequently. And last week I met with Yvonne Donetz, who's producing a video history of the city of Nashua, and I discussed the history of the airport. They're putting together a video with all the city components, talking about the history of the city. So the idea is that each business unit can take that piece of video back and use it for marketing purposes. So we'll see how that comes out. Our newsletter, the Boar Flyer, is currently reaching close to 700 recipients. We ask that you kindly forward the newsletter and ask people to sign up for themselves in order to help us grow our base. We did reach out to U.S. Customs and Border Protection to see what the process might be to have a U.S. Customs presence here, and at a minimum, it would cost the airport $140,000 per year to cover the cost of the officer. There are other costs as well, including providing a secure facility for them to perform their duties.
Is that for a full-time person?
It would be, yeah. It would be for a full-time CBP officer.
Is there a way of getting a part-time individual?
Manchester doesn't want to share.
Yeah, well, Manchester Airport does pay the full salary of this employee, and sharing the officer would mean taking flights and business away from them. We could certainly ask them if they'd be willing to share that officer. I don't know if they do need a facility here, though, to conduct their business, too, so there's a lot of requirements that go along with that facility as well.
Something we can work on, right?
Yeah. The Nashua Airport website has been completely revamped, and we welcome any comments and suggestions on how it can be made better. August 10th, New Hampshire Department of Transportation conducted their annual airport safety inspection. The airport was found to be in excellent condition with no safety issues. As a result of our meetings with our marketing consultant, we'll be pursuing the construction of a directory at the entrance to the airport on Perimeter Road to better help visitors find their destinations at the airport. EAA Young Eagles is scheduled for October 1st. It'll be held this year outside Air Direct Airways. October 12th, 2016 will be the 82nd anniversary of the grand opening of Boer Field. And during the first week of October, you will see our folks out there crack sealing out on India Ramp, Tower Ramp, and along taxiways Alpha, Bravo, Charlie, Delta, and Echo. And that's my report.
Alderman Shulman.
Thank you. One of the things that we need to be careful about, and I came up in the Conservation Commission meeting, is the notion that if those trees are cut, then the approach availability at night will be reestablished. And we heard it is, so it's not maybe, it's will be. Is that correct?
That's my understanding, yeah. That's
where did you get your understanding?
From the FAA.
Have they said that in writing? The problem we're going to run into is if we make that argument, if you make that argument to the city, and then they say, well, great, how's the night approach work? Oh, we didn't get it. They didn't give it to us. Now the trees are gone, and the promise or the intimation was made that if we do this, then this is going to happen. We need to be very careful when we're dealing with the city to make a statement like that and make sure that it's going to happen. If it's not going to happen, we can say this is one of the things we have to do, but then we should know what the others are.
Well, didn't we get commented in a report by DOT or the FAA that those trees were in the way and we could not use the approach because of those trees currently?
It came to me in the form of an email. It explained to me that approach can't be used at night, like you said, because there are penetrations into that circling approach plane. I don't have any reason to believe that removing the trees, once we remove the trees, that we won't be able to use that approach at night.
Is there a way we can get clarification from the FAA before the trees are removed?
Absolutely.
We said to make sure there aren't more penetrations or whatever that would preclude it, if that's the argument.
Just as a point of clarification, FAA's database, their GIS database, which houses all these obstructions, identifies trees as the tallest points in a certain 100 by 100 radius typically. So they set up a grid system and then they find those penetrations, and the one that we're talking about specifically identifies a large tree adjacent to Sharon Ave, and it says, quote unquote, cut everything that's above a certain elevation within 100 feet of this and you'll clear this approach. Is pretty much what they specified. I did a lot of the coordination in conjunction with Steve on the matter, and FAA is asking that you cut the tree to remove it from their database, and then they can reopen it. So by certifying to the FAA that you've removed the tree, you effectively have told them there's no penetration and the night operations will be restored. That's typically how it works.
When we had the meeting at your place, Carol brought photographs of trees that needed to be brought down. Were they not in that package?
Different trees.
Okay.
Different trees, different approaches.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cut all the trees is what you should do, in my opinion, but I didn't say that. Strike that for the record.
The city has conservation land, it's a wetlands buffer and all that, and these folks are passionate about their trees.
Well, we don't need to take the tree out. We just take it down, right?
There's options. The best mechanism to take it down is always to remove it completely. If you go in there and you top it, you are creating a liability both for the Conservation Commission, the city, and the airport, if you leave it and then it falls and causes damage or anything to that nature. So we would always advise any client, especially you guys in this case, to remove it completely because it can become a liability if you top it.
I just have a question about the weekend of September 24th and 25th. Where is this Comanche chapter being hosted?
Infinity.
Where?
At Infinity.
At Infinity? Okay.
Dave?
Next, just going back to Conservation Commission for a second. One of the things I mentioned, too, is the last time some of the trees were going to be cut down with regard to the runway, certain number of trees were tagged, then a whole lot more trees were taken down.
Ask
is what they said. I don't know for a fact this is what they said. So whenever it comes time to take trees down, we need to identify which ones are going to be taken down. And if there's 12, they can only be 12. If there's 10, they can only be 10. They don't want to go in there and say, yeah, we approve these, not look at scorched earth or anything more than what they approve. They're an advisory board. They have no legal authority, but we don't need to.
We want to keep them happy.
We don't need to make them happy.
Yeah, there was some confusion on the last project, and partially because of the way that the trees were cut and in the tight area. Originally, it was thought that they could stage from the road, and then the police department and Roger Houston from City Community Development recommended that it be staged on the parcel itself, so more trees were cut than originally anticipated. But that was relayed to the Conservation Commission at the time, that was a possibility because of the way it was on the road, and it may have to cut additional trees. But and also, tree cutting isn't an exact science. When you go out there and you do tree cutting, you tell them you're going to cut 12 trees with the caveat that we have to clear this approach, and there may be additional trees because, again, you know, FAA identifies through approach surveys penetrations, but they do it on a grid system, and you get the highest point in that grid, and that tells you if there's a penetration. And then you go out there and you look, and there could be 50 trees in that 100 by 100 grid that are all the same elevation. So there may be additional trees. And having presented to the CONSCOM, that was what was relayed. You know, we selectively cut in the area what needed to be cut. I can tell you that we cut what we had to, not everything. In the certain areas, it was a lot of the trees because of the close proximity to the end of the runway.
And I think that just has to be expressed. I wasn't part of that conversation. Yeah. I just heard one guy raise his hand in the Conservation Commission meeting and say, last time you said this, and you did this. Yeah. And I wasn't there, so
yeah.
We just need to manage that kind of thing.
Yeah, and like I said, tree cutting is not an exact science. You know, I mean, you go out there and you have the best data available to you, and you go out there and, you know, typically it's 5 to 10 years old, and you're going out there and you have to verify what the penetrations are. And at the end of the day, FAA is telling you, you know, in order to get these approaches published or recertified or put back into operations, you need to clear these trees and certify to them that they're clear. So,
do you know when that approach is last available at night?
I don't know the answer to that question, Steve.
I don't know.
Yeah.
When was it the last time, the last run that we had?
Yeah.
Had to be that around that time.
Yeah. That's about right. That's probably the last time the old runway was available, so probably back in 2010. Some of them, the way that the whole runway new approach system started was that they had to shut down pieces of it at a time of the old runway to bring up the new one online. And in the process of that, they still go through the evaluation of when those approaches can be put back online because they're trying to get to the best approaches first, and then they start working backwards from there to get all the approaches back up and operational.
I can tell you, David, I'll be working directly with that contractor, whoever it is, and I'll make sure that those, we've identified 11 trees, and we'll make sure that those 11 trees are the ones that are taken. Yeah. I'll see to it myself.
Steve, did you want to talk about the grant?
That's engineer's report next, but I'm happy to talk about it.
I can talk about it. I have a prepared report, so whatever's needed.
Okay. Why'd you?
You want the? Do you want the pleasure report of it, Steve?
No, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Eric Strand with Gale Associates. I'll first talk about the three projects. Project number one, Airport Master Plan Update. As has been mentioned, and I believe today you received the grant offer. FAA has finally, in the 11th and a half hour, issued their discretionary funds, which is what this project was being funded by, and have had to New Hampshire DOT. So as part of the block grant, they've issued this grant as well as the one for the pavement maintenance project down on the 3-2 end. That equated to, I think, $1.9 million total project revenue from the FAA, if I remember correctly. And what that's for was for the master plan and also for the second project on the list here. With that being said, New Hampshire DOT has issued their grant offer to the airport, which you guys need to turn around in a timely fashion, which means you need to execute and send it back with a copy of your insurance certificate. There's specific language that I believe Steve has as to exactly what that insurance binder needs to state. If you need it, let me know. I have a copy of it as well, which I can forward to. But it's, again, important. The reason why it's important, obviously the project's important, but the project technically can't start because it's a planning project until such time that you have that grant in place. And again, remember, in New Hampshire, you have to go through the governor council process, which adds even more time. So as of right now, if you get your grant offer back to New Hampshire DOT by October 6th, which should be doable, you'll be on the November 16th GNC meeting, which means you can then have approvals for to authorize to expend the funds somewhere around the 18th or 19th, depending on when they vote for it, or when they give you written authorization from governor council. As always, you should authorize a designated party to sign the grant offer at your meeting, so I would ask that you guys go ahead and formally vote to authorize Mike or a designated person to sign the grant offer, and then execute it and return it.
Do you have paperwork on any of that?
No, we don't have
it. You haven't received it yet? It went out Monday, so you should see it any day now. I coordinated with New Hampshire DOT. They said it was going out Monday. It was at the Attorney General's office last Friday, but he was on vacation, so it was supposed to go out on Monday, so you should see it probably tomorrow would be my guess.
So we don't have a meeting before October 6th, right? So we just get the information.
You've already voted to go for the grant, so which technically gives you the authorization, but I would just vote that you authorize Mike to sign it.
I make a motion that the chairman be authorized to sign it whenever you receive it.
You have a second?
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you.
And again, once the funds are in place, we'll go ahead and start. Our planning department is chomping at the bit to get started on that. So, project two, pavement reconstruction and maintenance on the 3-2 end. Again, same thing. You've received the funds, and it's just waiting for the funds to be authorized through governor and council. The only thing that I would add to this project is that we started to coordinate with Continental due to the late funding cycle, which seems to be the norm nowadays for FAA, as we've seen for the past couple projects. I've coordinated with Continental. They're not interested in starting the project this late in the year because it has pavement. Even though they control the pavement plants, they typically shut the pavement plant down around Thanksgiving time, which is good because you're not going to get a good product after that time frame. So they've actually formally requested upon award of it. They're still interested in the project, and they are glad they accept an award once it's available. So once the funds are in place, Gail will assist the airport in awarding it to Continental. But they've said that they don't have any interest in starting until next year, in early next spring. So I would advise the board to go ahead and upon receipt of the grant, issue a notice of award to Continental based on the award of the grant, and then to allow them to forego construction until next spring when it's more advantageous to get a better product.
So make a motion.
Well, I'm not sure.
Again, you'll need to. I'll give you the first one.
Is this going
to
be the early October as well?
This is going to be the same thing. Yeah.
Oh.
This is the same exact thing. So you'll need a vote to authorize Mike to sign the grant offer.
I make a motion to authorize the chairman to sign the contract in early October when they arrive.
Okay.
I'll second.
Your second. All in favor?
Aye.
Additionally, I'll need a motion to authorize Gail to execute contracts and notice of award to Continental based on the issuance of the grant and the acceptance of the grant from Governor Council.
I make a motion to.
What, Erickson? Dave.
Just a quick question. Last time we talked about paving, there was always this question of scope, how much are we going to do? And is that part of our discussion here, or what happens?
We can talk about it. So as part of it, New Hampshire DOT requested the full amount. Unfortunately, the federal government and New England region specifically was short on money this year, so we were only able to procure through grants enough to do just the base bid. And the base bid includes, as we talked about previously, removal of a portion, not reconstructing the entire run-up apron on the 3-2 end. So that's the scope that's included, and that was authorized by FAA and New Hampshire DOT as part of this project. We went to bat to try to get it. Unfortunately, the money just wasn't there. There was higher priorities within the region, and FAA and New Hampshire DOT couldn't get the funds to do all of the work that was originally put out to bid.
Excuse me, could you, Roger Mathis, for the record, could you run that bit back about 3-2 end now? What is going to be done? What is not going to be done?
So on the 3-2 end, the base bid included redoing a large portion of the run-up apron on the 3-2-N and removing a portion of it, because, and then the additive alternate work item, or the alternate work item A, was to reconstruct that portion that was to be removed, which was an additional cost of, I have to look at it, but I, off the top of my head, was over $200,000. The alternate work item was not able to be funded by New Hampshire DOT through the block grant program, so that will not be included in the project.
Are we saying that the current tie-downs there will remain?
That's a decision for the airport to make, and at this time, the scope of the project is to remove them.
Thank you. We had that conversation before, and you guys will have to work that out, but right. It seemed to me that to remove them would be problematic because of the business being located there. And so, as Alderman McCarthy pointed out when he was here, we can't move somebody out based on a need to make a decision on pavement when that represents their livelihood. So I think you're first going to be making a decision on that operation, and then secondly, on the pavement, it would seem to me.
Can I make a comment here, please?
Sure.
All right. We're talking about the Alpha ramp here specifically. The Alpha ramp is the most recognizable part of the airport, other than the control tower itself, I suppose, maybe the rotating beacon, but the Alpha ramp is what's exposed to the public. That's what they see when they see the airport, until they get onto the permit road. They may or may not go down the permit road. What they see is where we're parked over there. I'm trying to figure out why we didn't make the extra effort to try to get these. We spent millions of dollars here, but yet we neglected the part of the airport that is seen by most of the public. It makes no sense to me, other than also the fact that that would actually remove us from the building, from the airport, rather, as far as that location where we've been for 16, 17 years. Just curious why we didn't go the extra mile to try to make sure that didn't happen. I'm missing something. Please fill me in.
I think you did go. I think everything was put through, and the money didn't get approved, right? We put it all forward. Yeah.
They should have been a higher priority, is my point, because it's the part of the airport that's most seen.
So have decisions been made yet about exactly what we're going to do in that area? We still haven't, as a board, made that decision, right? We could leave it alone. We could do many, you know. But the decision, what you're recommending is...
New Hampshire D&D has also weighed in slightly on this, and that they don't want you to leave a piece of pavement there that's going to deteriorate and cause FOD issues. They would strongly recommend that the pavement be removed if it's not going to be reconstructed as part of this project.
So that's what we are, we're FOD.
And what would be put there?
That's not the statement that's being made, but deteriorating pavement can cause chunks, has been known to cause chunking. And as some of the pavement has failed down there, has passed its useful life, you can cause, with prop wash, large chunks to be displaced and cause, you know,
sounds
aircraft.
Sounds to me that it should be a higher priority as far as what gets paid and what shouldn't get paid. If you're really worried about the flood and the chunkage, that's as much.
I'm just curious, we've talked a lot about that part of the project. Do I understand also that the paving is going to extend down into Hangar 1715 area?
Just the center core of it and is to be reconstructed, and the rest of it is to be overlaid for drainage purposes.
I'm not a civil engineer. Can you do that in English? Are you going to repave the aisles between the hangars?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, some of the drainage needs to be redone in between it so it can promote positive drainage away from that. In doing such, it creates grading issues for intensive purposes. If you modify the drainage, you need to be able to slope it into the drainage system. So there is some rework leading up to the hangars to be able to get it to drain positively and stop any of the issues that have been caused over the years on the pavement as a result.
Thank you.
I thought you were an engineer,
Steve.
I am, but I went higher up the hill at college and went to electrical engineering.
Just to speak to Steve's comments, everywhere when we scoped out this project, knowing that there are a certain limited amount of dollars that we're able to get for this project, everywhere we possibly could, we looked for areas where we can we can minimize costs. Wherever we could, we look for areas where instead of tearing up the pavement, we can mill it and overlay it. We added in the area where the tie-downs are on the south end of the airport. We added it into the project as an alternate work item because we wanted to get feedback from the contractor as to exactly how much it's going to cost. And it came back from the contractor that repairing, repaving those tie-downs down there would come at a cost of about $130,000. So in a project like this, we have to weigh the cost of the entire project and you know, we have to do what is best for the entire airport,
really.
I
would agree. And that's why I said what I said.
Yeah.
That's the area that is the first thing that people see. There's tens of thousands of people every day go back and forth that area. And they see us out there, the activity of it, the airplanes that are actually moving it, people that are discussing aviation. It's what excites people, what draws them in. To take us out of there is not good for the airport. And that's the point I was making.
Wes,
I'd like to point out that, you know, I assume that the money that the FAA supplies doesn't end next year. I mean, can you leave that there and then repave it in another 3 or 4 years?
I suppose that's an option, but there's a lot of other pavements on the airport that are distressed, and the airport, it based on the pavement condition index, which was done by the state 3 years ago? What was it?
2012,
4 years ago now. They've identified other areas of the airport that have significant pavements that are deteriorated. So, you know, there's kind of a pecking order. Every 3 years is about $1 million worth of pavement maintenance, which is outlined. It's something that can be discussed in the future, but it's a decision that the board should probably make.
The FOD down at the off-ramp area, bear in mind, at one time, that was the only place on this field that you could park up B-17 and R-4 C-47 because it was stable enough to hold the aircraft. That's how solid that area is. It was here for a long time until it went to launch. So we don't have big chunks of pavement coming up. What we do have is a couple of drains that should have been fixed 3 years ago, and I identified them that the problem is all tore up around the drain, but it's not the ramp, it's the drain. What I'm saying is they're a very stable area down there. There's other areas of the field that need a heck of a lot more repairs for them.
Than the
hangar areas than the
off-ramp
does.
Alderman
Sheldon. Thanks. We're doing some mill and fill other parts of the ramp. What's that going to cost, and what areas are we doing mill and fill in other parts of places around the airport?
We previously had a graphic. I don't have it with me tonight, and I apologize for that, but we previously had a graphic that showed the scope of the services on the project. It's probably in past meeting minutes, but I can gladly provide it to the airport. To Steve, and you can get it from Steve if you want. But it does, it's, there was a large portion down on the 3-2 end, primarily the taxiway that comes around and goes into the 3-2 run-up apron or the south apron down there, is to be reconstructed, and then you start to work away off the pavements and the aprons off of it, and a lot of that was to be milled and overlaid as part of it.
I thought I heard comment earlier that we're doing something more towards the north. Are we doing mill and fill up there too?
No.
No other mill and fill. I think that my recommendation would be that before you sign anything, especially before you sign a contract that says we're going to take that out, you need to have a plan for these guys before you do that. And if you get the authorization to sign, that's fine. But I think there certainly are limited dollars. But within that, you guys need to set the priorities as a board with a vote rather than as an administrative decision.
Thank you. Andy?
Regardless of what you're talking about here, if you go back to something that we've discussed month after month, which is the marketing of the airport, like Steve was absolutely right. The only airplanes you can see that are parked are his two airplanes. And for people in the city that many people don't even know the airport exists, they happen to come down the street oh yeah, there's some airplanes, that's an airport. But if there are no airplanes there, they'd have no idea that we really have an airport here other than some airplane happens to go overhead when they happen to be driving down the street. But other than that, the airport is just another park from all intents and purposes. From the outside, I think some real thought ought to be given to how this airport is going to be presented to the city before you start tearing up tie downs on the street side.
So Eric, if Mike signs this approval by October 6th, which is when you want it to be signed, it will go through exactly how you guys have discussed, right?
The scope of the work can always be changed through change order through part of the project, so you guys could talk about it after this and it could be changed. It's just going to be subject to whether or not funding is available for the modifications. But, you know, the funds are limited within the project. Resources within New England region are very limited, and your chances of getting any additional money are slim to none at best.
And we couldn't just leave that alone in the funding that, well, not that it's going to be covered into it, but something was going to be covered there. If that's not repaid... Something was going to be done there, right?
It was supposed to be turned into turf.
Turf. So there is some money put aside to put turf there.
Correct.
Okay. So if we didn't do anything and left it for a period of time, that money that was put there for the turf can't be used for something else by us, right? Or could it?
It could be used as for something included in the project, potentially. It would need any scope changes would need to be authorized through by New Hampshire DOT prior to them being spent.
Mm-hmm. So maybe we should come up with a list of options, you know, leave it alone, do this, do that. I'd like to discuss more.
Bob, you had something?
Well, I just said that let's not mess around with the October 6th date. Go ahead and sign it, and let's have a special meeting and lay it out up on here and see what we can change, what we should change, what we might change.
And we can change it after he signs it. We can modify it and change it afterwards.
You can always change the scope of a project during the middle of a project. It just comes down to if you have the money within the grant to be able to do it. You could make a decision to cut half the project out because it's not advantageous or in your best interest. You just have to get approvals from New Hampshire DOT to do such.
Mm-hmm. Roger.
I'm just going to point out something that if you grass that area in, then we are going to have an area like the rest of the airport where all the grass is dead. So it's not going to look very inviting for cars to be parking there and look at dead grass. The other thing I would ask is, okay, if you do that, is there a problem with those tie downs still being there, but they're on the grassed area? All you got to do is a hole in the ground with a hook on it, and that's it.
A little more involved than that, just so to make sure they're safe. But FAA does have provisions to allow for turf tie downs.
Could that be incorporated into that plan if you grass that area?
You have to go back to New Hampshire DOT for authorization for any changes, and it's a decision that the board will have to make.
Now, the other alternative might be concrete as well. You tie it down to concrete, it's not going anywhere. That's what you would.
There's tons of options for tie downs. We have a pretty beefy one that we use just because of the soils and the water and the frost susceptibility in this area. So,
Wes.
I was just going to note that as a taxpayer, I won't be offended if you guys don't spend that money and just leave that place alone. I'm not aware there's a penalty for underspending on the project.
No, there's not.
I second that. I'm a taxpayer in the city, too.
Yes.
I like that idea, too. It sounds like there are a lot of options, and if we have an opportunity to talk about it before we start digging anything up and putting paper down. One of the things that Sandy mentioned I think sounded interesting, too. There's a cost associated with doing a turf, and that money is part of the project. So whatever the cost of that turf was, if the turf's not done, then there's presumably some money there that could be used for Plan B, whatever that might be. So when you guys are having your discussion, it could be helpful on how easy it is to figure out how much the turf portion of the project costs. But we know what the portion of work that's going to be done in that area costs. Then we can have information to consider. Well, we add a little bit to it, or if we change this a little bit, then we can still
And just as a clarification, leaving the pavement there, the pavement, I forget the age of the pavement. I think it was last reconstructed in.
That's almost 40 years old.
It's way
beyond its useful life.
It's really useful life.
In rough shape.
And you know, it is a liability potentially to the airport to leave it in place. I'll leave it at that. But it's something that you guys will need to discuss and make a final decision on, and so that we can coordinate with the contractor, New Hampshire DOT, on exactly what the finished scope of work is. But again, as Bob pointed out, I would advise you to accept and sign the grant offer and get it back, because you don't want to not accept it and lose the money, period.
When will we have to meet with the make final approval on the scope?
It would be great to have a decision before the new year.
Okay. So we could put the scope at a future meeting?
Well, I would think we'd have a special meeting for it.
You want a special meeting?
Yeah, maybe during the daytime.
Could we wait until the new board members are on board? Or does
I'll do that. Sure.
Okay.
All
right.
Okay. Yeah. I'd just like to make another comment. We're in an election cycle, and I noticed in the article in the paper they always use the word grant, and I understand the technicalities of that. But if the politics of things, if people are looking at it and say, wait a minute, the Nashua Airport got a grant of $2 million from the state of New Hampshire, this is federal money. It's all our taxpayer money, but if you're up there in Concord arguing for money from the state and they say, well, we don't have it, but you gave the airport $2 million, et cetera, we should be aware of that.
Yeah, again, New Hampshire operates under a block grant program, which means that the federal government, FAA in this case, issues the funds to New Hampshire DOT, which then authorizes and issues grants based on that. But it is federal dollars, as Bob alluded to.
Okay. So there's a motion on the floor, right?
No.
Not yet.
Mm-hmm. There was a motion to allow you to sign.
Approve signing the grant.
Right.
There were two. You need a third, right?
Yes.
What's your motion? I mean, he needs a third motion.
The first one was to authorize Mike to sign and accept the grant and return it to New Hampshire DOT. Second one was to authorize Gail to issue a notice of award and contracts to Continental for the said work in this of the project. And that's it. That's all I need. I don't need to do.
We did the first project.
The first one was for the first project.
No, you need one for both because it's two separate grants.
Yeah.
Oh, we did two.
We did two, so the third one is for Continental.
So it's Continental, yeah.
Okay. So what Eric said, I'll make that motion.
Is there a second?
Second.
All discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you.
All right, lastly, project number three has been mentioned previously.
Excuse me. So let's put on the to-do list that we'll have a special meeting on the scope. Once we have a full board.
Good. Project three, for all intents and purposes, we're calling it Runway 1432 Groove and Seal. That was brought up at the start of the meeting. This project has been programmed for FY17, which means it receives 17 funds if the funds are available. When we did the CIP meeting on August 2nd, we also did the scoping meeting for this project to outline what the project was going to include. We are in the process of developing a scope. I've done a lot of coordination with contractors because one of the big issues was operational impacts to this airport, obviously. So we've been coordinating with one of the largest contractors who does this. It's called Cardinal, and talking about different options that there are and stuff like that. So in order to develop a really good scope for this, I've been doing a lot of coordination with them, as well as a company, GSB, who does the application of the pavement rejuvenator, and a marking contractor to make sure we're minimizing the operations and trying to give you the best possible product, all while trying to give you a good scope of services. So we're in the final processes of putting together a scope of work. I hope to have that done by the end of the month, so we can get that to you guys and start going down the path of that project. At this particular time, really, there's the only thing that I'll say is that, again, operational impacts are one of the biggest concerns with this. Dollars is another one, and operational impacts and dollars kind of go hand in hand. Obviously, if you limit it to certain times during the day, it makes it very difficult for the contractor to do the work, so it could drive the cost up. We've talked about a lot of different options at the scope meeting in terms of whether we do it at night, during the day, certain sections. There's a lot of different options. going to have to investigate, and we're going to come up with conceptual ideas on how we can phase this, get input from you guys as well as the public on what's the best options, and try to come up with a good plan. That's all I had. I did attach a copy of the CIP that derived from the CIP meeting back on August 2nd. Again, we didn't meet last month, so I just attached it is here. Take a look at it. New Hampshire DOT would like comments back from the airport. I think we've already gotten comments back anyway based on the meeting. So you guys just take, it's just there. If there's any changes, let me know. We can coordinate with New Hampshire DOT to finalize that. And then I also attached, just for general public, GASAMA, which both Steve and I are involved with, Steve's actually the president, is doing an Aviation Day in 5K on October 2nd, Sunday, October 2nd, at Concord Municipal Airport. If anyone has any questions, feel free to ask Steve or I, but it's a good initiative. Last year we had 165 runners. We had a kids' race. We had about 700 to 800 people come through the door. We had exhibitors such as GE Aviation with their jet engine. It's got like a cross-section through a jet engine. We had exhibitors from the Christian McAuliffe Planetarium. The Planetarium had a very cool display that they put on. And all in all, it was just a great experience. EAA Young Eagles has a chapter that's also doing free flying for any kid 8 to 17. I would encourage you to bring your kids down and check it out. But it's just a good initiative. We also partnered with New Hampshire Food Bank Co-op, and we raised 225 pounds last year. We hope to exceed that twice fold this year. It's free to the public. There is a cost for the race because we have to have a race company manage it. There's a cost associated with that. But if you have any questions, feel free to contact me directly or Steve. Steve will probably direct you to me. So, but it's a good initiative. I'd love to see everyone there if you can make it. It's, it was a great time last year. We hope to exceed it this year. So that's all I have.
Roger. Can I go back to a point about this groove and seal?
Sure.
For the runway. It's been mentioned that the possibility of the airport being shut down for 2 weeks, is that being considered?
A whole bunch of options are being looked at. I don't think 2 weeks is the answer. I think it definitely won't be 2 weeks straight, but it's going to come down to what the capabilities are of a contractor to be able to do the work. And we're going to work with the airport to derive what the scope is in terms of how much pavement they have available or their daily operations and try to minimize the operational impacts at all times, if that makes sense. The point is, we don't want to close down the runway for 2 weeks.
Well, if you shut down the runway for a two-week period off and on, going to affect people like Infinity, fuel flow, the jets, all the training centers on the field, Moneyman, Leland, everybody's going to be affected. There's a lot of money going to be lost, and that should be the first thing that's taken off the table. This thing should be done at night when the field is shut down, so it does not affect these businesses.
I don't necessarily Duly noted. The other piece to that is you do need to remember there is a residential area immediately adjacent to this, and it is a very loud operation. So,
airport was here before those houses were built.
We've been talking about this, and we're talking about having a public session with people. I went out and paid attention to all the grooving that's been done on Route 3, and I live very close to Route 3, and I know that it can be loud. I've had some suggestions that perhaps during the night, if while they're working, we could park our large equipment adjacent to it to buffer the sounds, etc.
Yep.
So there's discussions going on to mitigate this and close the airport for the minimum amount of time necessary and do the work at night. Nothing has been decided yet.
Yeah.
Thank you. Old business, director vacancies. We have two vacancies. Do you want to report on that, all of us?
Sure. We had a meeting of the Personnel Administrative Affairs Committee on Monday. I'm not on that committee, but I went to the meeting, as I normally do when someone's coming through, and both Farrell and Joe were approved by the committee. It's a pretty simple process, not many questions. It's really pretty nice.
Very similar to my situation.
And when do the aldermen vote on it?
We're going to meet on Tuesday next week, and I hope you guys will be up for that. If you come, if you're not there, you have to get sworn in some other time, but come down for that. That'll be done in the other part of the meeting. You'll be sworn in. And then once you're sworn in, that's it. There's nothing else to do. They're officially on the authority. And then the whole issue of two people gathering together goes away, effective Tuesday evening as soon as you get sworn in. So that's it. So it went great. Committee, I think, was impressed. One of the aldermen, actually, yeah, one of the aldermen sitting next to me, Mary Ann Melisa-Goli, I think she's Ward 8, during the meeting, she kind of leaned over and said, these two guys are really, really good. And that's always great to hear. And I'm pleased, as I am for all volunteers in the city, but here in the airport especially, because this is not quite the same as some of the other boards and commissions. You guys do a lot, have a lot of responsibility, and have an asset that needs to start making more of the city. Not just more tax dollars, but you know, more business has to be managed and bring business in. And five member board has to be tasked with. So it went well. Tuesday, we'll be on our way.
And I want to thank the office for providing all the directors a new handbook. And you'll be getting one. Okay, good.
It's not officially ours yet.
The logo on the book.
We're getting there. We're getting there.
Well, officially,
unofficially read it.
Okay.
Next item is board actions. I want to go through the list of things that were open to be done for the September meeting. First one was done, the distribution of board packets.
The second one done.
Second one is completed. The parking lot leases for new non-flight side tenants.
So we have been signed by you. They're in their hands to be executed fully, and we're just waiting to get them back.
Okay. What? Yeah. What are the?
Nope.
the
side parking lot.
Do we have copies of them? Or nothing in the package.
We're just waiting to get it back from them.
Okay. But they're out.
Will you follow up on that, please?
Yep. Absolutely. Yep.
Okay. Thank you. Last email address system. Is that in place?
I believe it is. Yeah, we have 700. Email addresses that we're
okay.
Blasting to.
Okay, marketing activities, we'll touch base with that shortly. Aviation intern?
Cross that one right off.
That's a big question.
Yeah. Okay, and the rest of the items are for October and future meetings.
If I could just comment on the aviation intern, tomorrow I have a meeting with a gentleman named, I forgot his name now, he's from Hollis Brookline High School. Last year we did a program through them called their Life Transition Skills Program, where we took on a special needs student at the airport for about an hour a week. This person went through the process of filling out an application, coming to an interview, showing up to work on time, wearing what they're supposed to wear, and I tell you, it was really a fantastic opportunity for the airport to get involved with this program. We're gonna look at doing that again this year for this school year. So
yeah, that's great. Infinity did it, Midfield did it, a bunch of airport people did it. It was really interesting and really good. I think that's a whole different ball of wax than this, so, than the intern. Than the aviation intern.
Okay, next is the new business. We have the airport logo review. I want to thank everyone who voted in the election, selection of a logo. Steve, you want to report on the results?
Yeah, we had about 192 responses and then about two dozen paper responses from the airport. I can put them up on the board if you like. Mary Beth, can you just hit the on button on your way by there? Up? Yeah, right there. Thank you.
We're not going to spend a whole lot of time.
No, let's, I don't even think we need to do that.
take a moment for this to come up. But there were lots of interesting comments that we got back. I'll show you the breakdown of what the preferences were. The logo with the three aircraft seemed to be the most popular. That's very interesting.
That's not your picture?
That's my picture, yeah. But it's not showing what I have on my screen.
Too much.
Well, there are worse pictures.
Well, thank you very much. I don't know. A little bit of a technical difficulty there. Sorry.
Is that Spider-Man?
That's true. No, it's my son. I'll just tell you what the results were then.
Your paper.
I have a couple of paper copies. Thank you, Mary Beth.
If you could turn all the lights back on, Andy. If you don't mind just hitting off on that panel. Thank you. There were basically four questions on the survey. The first one was we asked. There were three logos that were presented in addition to our logo. First question was which is the logo that you like best out of these four? The overwhelming majority chose the Nashua Airport logo with the three airplanes. That was the most popular item.
This one here.
That's correct. Yeah. That was the most popular.
They're not in your board packages. They should have been in there, but this is. You have the results somewhere. But these are the results.
And what percentage voted for this?
74% voted for that one. There was also, we asked what kind of positive associations do you make with the logo that you chose as number one, and there was, for that item, there was about 120 or so comments about that particular logo, why they thought it was the best logo. As far as logo like lease, there's one there which has the three different colors. It was kind of the last logo. It's got some yellow in it. Not that one. It'd be the next one, Michael. Yeah, it'd be that. That was the one that was liked least for all kinds of different reasons. Yeah. 54% of the folks thought that was the worst of the bunch.
Looks like a soccer ball.
And that was some of the comments that were made. Yeah, it looks like some kind of World Cup logo, or it does look like a soccer ball. That was a comment that was made.
So we have on the agenda for the board to select a logo.
I'd like to make a motion to adopt logo number one as presented by Dave Heath, which is the Nashua Airport Warfield.
Is there a second?
Just out of curiosity, what was the percentage for the existing one?
That wanted it?
Yeah.
74%.
No. The original.
The original?
The current one.
26%.
26%.
Wow. Did I ask it?
Yeah.
Some of the comments that were made about the original logo were they liked the other logo better because it actually says Nashua Airport or Field. Ours just says Nashua. We could opt to add those words, Warfield or Nashua Airport, in there somewhere. It's an option.
Anyway, I made a motion.
All right, second motion has been seconded. Discussion, Alderman Chamberlain.
So the question, where exactly will this appear?
Wherever the logo is.
Yes.
Well, it'll be part of our marketing campaign. It'll be wherever we... our logo currently appears. It's, I don't know if it's on our letterhead, business cards, any promotional flyers. We would have it, and we'd be certainly on our website.
One thing, if I may, I know this is designed supposed to tie into what the city is doing, and the city hasn't really changed from what they had before. this logo, the new logo, appears, you know, footnotes in various places on the bottom of brochures and whatnot. It doesn't feature prominently. We're still the gate city, and you really don't see this appear very much. Now, the Chamber of Commerce uses it. That's true. That's their major logo. If we're going to be doing a marketing plan, I think we talked about having a consultant help us with that at some stage. Was there some talk about that?
We have had meetings with consultants.
It may come up that the consultant will say, you know, you might want to consider something else for your logo. It's possible. So how tightly are we going to be locked into this logo if we choose it? And we had talked before about it possibly being temporary and, you know, up for further revision later. When we're marketing, we're not just marketing to people that respond to a survey. We're going to be marketing to business jet operators. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure that is a logo that's going to say to a business jet operator, yeah, that's me. You might need something different. And that marketing consultant who helps us market to business jet operators might say, you know what, this crowd is probably more likely to respond to something that has these characters.
Do you want to add what consultant said on marketing?
She said that she looked at all of them, and this is the one that she also liked. We kicked around the issue with the absence of helicopters and the absence of the jet aircraft. And basically her opinion was, well, you know, you can't necessarily put everything into the logo. If I can, I don't know, Steve, a summary would be she likes this one here particularly.
Okay.
And I agree with what you're saying there. I don't think we need to, you know, rip down everything and immediately replace it. But I got three things in the hopper right now, one of which is the directory sign that will be somewhere, hopefully at the front entrance to the airport, and hopefully that would be on it. The other one is you and I had talked about some print advertising. If we do that, conceivably that could be in there too. But you just brought up a good point. We might chase away some jet people.
Well, that's the group that we want to get in here. If I were to assign a characteristic to this, this looks very millennial to me. And millennial, I'm not sure that's as dynamic as we want it to be. Looks trendy, and we just should be very careful about what the jet group is going to want to see as we move forward. And just sensitive to the fact that maybe we'll need to alter the course a little bit.
Okay.
If we don't, we don't.
Wes.
Wes Liu, I'd point out that the existing logo probably doesn't do anything for that population either. So
it may not.
Doing nothing is not progress. And, you know, we're not going to carve this on the side of a pyramid. It can be changed next month. Dave Heath put a lot of work into this. A lot of people have put a lot of consideration into it. Nobody's come up with a better idea. I would urge that you just move forward. It's not a lifetime commitment.
All right. There's a motion on the floor to accept this logo. Is that a logo?
Second.
It's been seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Next is the review of the sign policy.
Okay. Being a business owner on the airport, I think it's pretty important to have signage. Bob and I have talked about it a lot. A lot of people have mentioned how hard it is to find places. So, I reviewed our current policy. Where is it, Bob? All signs to be erected on the airport will be submitted to the NAA for review and approval prior to obtaining a city permit. So, I'm not sure how I feel about that, but that's what our policy is now. So if you're going to put a sign, we just ask that you bring it before the board, and we have to approve it.
That has been that policy, yeah.
And I know in the past, Dennis wasn't didn't want phone numbers on there, didn't want different things. We don't have any limitations, right? We don't have anything written in stone.
No, but the city has requirements for signage.
So as long as it's a city, as long as it complies with city regulations, and it comes to us, there should be no reason why we say no.
Do we have to comply with the city regulations on signs?
Everybody does, right? No, we don't, for signage?
I don't believe so.
No.
I mean, what if it contradicts that requirement?
Dave, do you know? For signage? Do we have to comply with the city stuff for signage? I would assume.
I'm not sure what the regs are, but...
It says before going to the city in our...
I think it's only signs that would be...
Visible from the
visible
road.
To the public.
Bingo.
Yeah.
Yeah,
once
the
you enter the airport...
The FAA cares about your signs on the airside.
Right.
And the city cares about signs on the public side.
Mm. So permanent road is...
Right.
We can still put signs up there.
Actually, I found something out the other day, too, that Perimeter Road, I confirmed, is it's our road.
Yeah.
It's not a city road.
I was afraid of that.
Yeah.
So they may have even less interest knowing that it's ours.
Okay.
Does that mean that you need an FAA grant to repave it?
Unfortunately, it's going to be needing paving, and FAA is not going to be involved.
Okay, so basically our policy is what it is there, and the board will accept any signs for review, basically. Okay. Next is DWC leases. Just in your packet. We have... there's three leases that the college has with us. And it totals about $1,700 a month, $1,743, which translates to about $21,000 a year. They're currently current on their...
Current, they haven't paid for September.
Okay. Paid through September?
No.
Not paid
September.
Through all end of August.
And they probably won't either, because the company filed for bankruptcy Friday. So my understanding from attending the meeting that Southern New Hampshire had with Paul LeBlanc last week,
mm-hmm.
when he came to talk to the students here, is that as of Thursday, they were taking over responsibility for the bills, so anything before that is going to be stuck in bankruptcy, I guess.
So they're taking responsibility for the bills? For the
yeah.
Will they'll be paying this, SNHU?
That's what he said.
Now, my understanding is that's only going through May, isn't that right?
Yes, and actually he made a point of saying that they have a license to use the campus, but that they have... there's an option that they might have to honor where they would have only have 30 days to vacate, depending on what happens with the bankruptcy. So,
I have a question. I'm sorry.
Farrell.
What do they, Farrell Woods for the record, what is currently being leased? Which building?
Three spaces, all adjacent to the Aviation Flight Center. And then there's one that's across the street.
Does the airport own the flight center?
We don't. We own the tower portion. The rest of the building belongs to the college.
I had concerns about that. Lenny had concerns, and he asked me, you know, what's going to happen to the tower, because... It was my understanding that ITT owned it, but I called Mary Beth, and we own the tower portion and the land lease, right? We do the land lease. So I spoke with one of the board members at ITT DWC, and he said that, the FAA would probably step in. Anyway, if anything ever happened with bankruptcy or any of the rest of that building, I think we'll be fine. That shouldn't be affected, is that right? As far as you
that sounds like you're asking for a legal opinion.
Yeah. Do you know, Steve, if that's...
I don't know. No.
How long are the leases?
I don't know offhand. The aviation center was somewhere around the 80s, so they're probably all somewhere around the 80s, but that's the best information I can give you.
Doesn't that make the airport a party to the bankruptcy proceeding?
I don't know.
It's possible.
I would think that that would.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Of course you are.
Yep. Yeah, we're going to be a debtor.
Okay. We'll keep you posted if we hear anything. Fuel farm, we already did. Any public input?
Are you going to do the parachute jump, or are you going to wait?
You can do the what?
The parachute jump. The Young Eagles.
Oh, yes. It's not on the agenda here, right?
Yeah.
It's on my agenda.
Yeah.
Oh, this is on the old agenda. Okay. There's a request to allow a parachute jump for the Young Eagles event on October 2nd.
October 1st.
First. And
the
would,
second is in Concord. We're not.
Okay, right.
No parachutes there.
And that would require closing the airport for a period of time.
15 minutes max.
Would it be during the beginning
during
of it?
The
or?
Event. And about halfway through, we try to arrange it about halfway through to have the auto come out of Pepperell. And I gave you three packets. The first packet explains exactly how they will perform and what they will do. The second packet is a question about insurance, and that will all be taken care of with the airport. Also co-named as insured. And the last packet is the waiver that we have to get from the FAA. And this may not be able to happen because all this stuff has to fall into place. And the first thing that has to happen is for the board to give me a letter saying, yes, we say it's okay. I need that first before we can proceed. And if it ends up just the groundwork for next spring, then it's the groundwork for next spring. But if we can make it happen for this one, it would be kind of nice.
How would it affect the Young Eagle flights?
It would. The Young Eagle flights are all going on. They'll stop for 15 minutes. All the parachute people will deploy, they'll land. They'll pick up their stuff, get out of the way. They're going to set up tables. They're going to demonstrate how they repack chutes and stuff like that for the kids. So they're going to put on a little display, too, that all the kids will be able to see and walk through. Like I said, the paperwork is intense, and it starts on in your lap.
Yeah.
And without a note from you, I can't go anywhere. Okay.
Wes?
Speaking of some of his parachutes on the Nash Airport a few times, you can submit the 7711 without this board's.
Well, they come up with a couple of new rules that they found, and it said you're supposed to have their written approval first.
Wow, that's changed. But it doesn't really have to disrupt airport operations. The tower coordinates it, and they talk to what's now Boston Approach. Typically, the jump plane flies overhead. The tower holds everyone off for a couple of minutes. The skydivers get out, they open, they land, and then everything goes back to normal. It's about a 5-minute disruption.
Okay. I think it would be great, very entertaining for the kids. It's also another aspect of flying, which I think is great, educational. It'll break up the monotony. I think it's a great thing. I think we should.
Someone want to make a motion?
I'll make a motion to approve Ron's request and get a written letter to him yesterday.
That's what we need.
A second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. I'd like to just go one step further. Steve and I have talked about this. I think we should call New Hampshire DOT and ask them to grease the skids at FAA and get it approved.
From what I understand, the DOT doesn't have much to do with it. It would be a courtesy thing to do.
Well, but... You see, New Hampshire DOT is our FAA, so that's
not for this.
Not for this.
It's a different FAA.
Okay.
And this FAA
Nothing greases the wheels. You haven't dealt with anybody like this. Farrell and I deal with these.
Yeah.
On a
we have a phone number.
He's different. We'll see what we can do.
Anyway,
can we make something happen quick with them?
Any way we can help.
So who's going to take care of that letter? Mary Beth, can you get that done right away and get it to Ronnie tomorrow? Do you want to do it? Do you want to do it?
Sure.
Somebody will do it? By tomorrow morning? What time?
The
time you're waking up tomorrow.
I don't get to get
the
call.
I was off and get you a couch and a TV.
Yeah, you did.
I don't think the FISDO guys are there today.
All right. Any other new business? Okay, then we go back to public input. All the Charlemagne, I'll work my way around here.
Thanks. I just wanted to encourage anyone who has not yet met Joe Duquette, the new board member, to come up and say hello tonight. We all know Farrell, which is great, but Joe is new to the community, and so you can stick around if you haven't met Joe yet. Spend a little time.
I keep calling you Bob, so I might still do that, so forgive me.
You want to tell us a little bit about your background, Joe?
Sure. Yeah. Joe Duquette. Everybody knows that one now. Basically a lifelong resident of Nashville, grew up in a military family. But essentially, Wheaton Drive is home. My parents still live over there. So I grew up with the airport in my backyard. So it's never been not in my mind, for sure. Graduated Nashville High. Graduated the University of College, aviation management degree. Was an ROTC here, got commissioned in the Air Force, went out for the Air Force for a little while. Came back to the home region, if you will, working in Connecticut. I was an airport systems consultant for 11 years. So I did big airports, very large airports, baggage handling systems, explosive detection systems, apron systems, ground support equipment, a lot of stuff that Yale does, just on a bigger, you know, LAX type things, you know, integrating the A380 into the Tibbett terminal out there, all that kind of good stuff. So got lots of hands-on airporty type stuff. Currently work in systems integration firm down in Massachusetts. So I'm in the engineering world. So my head's in that numbers and technical world. And glad to be here. Glad to join something that I've always sort of had a side interest in for many years, and glad to be able to have an active role and hopefully be able to contribute. So
are you a pilot?
And a pilot, sorry. Yeah, got my license in. Well, that's obviously I got my license in '94. And as the story goes with a lot of people, I ran out of money, got married, had kids. So airplane single engine land was in the middle of my instrument rating, and the cash went to other things. So that's part of my kids are 16 and soon to be 19 in December, so I'm at that phase of life right now where I'm starting to get my head back above water a little bit, and flying has taken a little bit of a back seat over the years, but I hope to use this as sort of an impetus for myself to find a way back into it and to get more active. I got my license here back when old GFW was here. I don't know if anybody ever knew Lou White. He was my flight instructor here. Got my check ride with Check Ride Charlie up at Charlie Cash in Manchester. I signed my past a few years ago. But he ran my butt through the ringer like a lot of people who took a check ride with him. It was all set up to be a very, you know, this is what he's going to do. Back in that day, I'll get on the flying stories here for a minute, because everybody was in flying those flying stories. I had a little aversion to stall practice. I had a tendency to get the ailerons involved and get myself into some hairy situations. So my flight instructor, Bill Lou, when we were getting towards the time to take the check ride, got all my cross countries done, got all that stuff done, got everything good. I was good to go with everything, but I would get really antsy in the it was stall training, it wasn't stall awareness, it was stall and spin training. So he would just sit up there, he's sitting obviously in the right seat, and he smacked me in the head whenever I would go to grab the stick. He just smacked me in the back of the head. And then I got the stall recovery good, and then the spin thing was a problem. I got a little antsy on the spin thing. And one of the first times we went into a spin, as soon as we had about one and a half rotations, I kind of looked at him, and he quickly realized that, uh-oh, he's frozen. So he recovered, so we We modified the slapping in the back of the head during the stall to slapping in the back of the head with spin recovery. So he spun me and spun me and spun me and spun me until I wanted to do it. And just a side little backstory to that, I started my initial flying training at the Aero Club at Hanscom. And I had a really cocky instructor down there. We were flying the Beechcraft Skippers. And they weren't V-tails, they were conventional tails. Oh, T-tail, yeah, sorry, yeah, T-tail. Like the mini Tomahawk. Yeah. And we were out over, I think, Shirley Mass or something one day. He was Mr., you know, I almost went to the Naval Weapons Fighter School. I was almost. So he had a bit of a thing going on. And we were doing power on, power off stall training, and he decided he was going to show me a little something with a hybrid version of the stall. So we went from wings level to a dive, got some reserve airspeed, and then he pulled up into the vertical, and he was going to show me how, you know, I don't know what he was going to show me, to be honest with you. But all I know is we were in a VFR on the airplane, and we were climbing, and all of a sudden we rolled over, flat on our back. And we winged over, and it was all instantaneous, but I saw the uncaged gyros just flop in the air, right, and just start flopping. And we got into and it went sky, ground, sky, and all of a sudden I heard, oh, shit. And he was doing a lot of this stuff. And
just not going to happen.
We pulled out of that, and he goes, I think we're done for the day. I go, oh, yeah, we're done for the day. We are done for the day. So that was the last time I flew with him. That was it. So I moved on. I came up here to GFW and Lou and finished all that out. So,
we see a lot of that going on out here at the airport.
Yeah, so that's my first great flying story. But yeah, so aviation's always been a passion for me. It's been something I've been interested in forever. I was also a Civil Air Patrol cadet for a number of years here. We actually had the old Kwanzaa Hut. That's long since been whatever, kind of the great Kwanzaa Hut graveyard. So this has been home. This has been place in my heart for a long time, and was thrilled to see the opportunity come up, and actually started talking to Oliver Shulman last October, I think it was. So, so great. I'm glad to be here. Hopefully, I can have an impact, and I'm gonna do a lot of listening. So, at first, you're probably gonna not see me do too much talking. I want to do a lot of listening. I now have a new set of ground rules about how I have to listen, and talk, and make sure I don't listen and talk at the same time, and make sure there's not enough people or too many people. So I want to do a lot of listening. I want to get to know everybody for sure. One of the first things I mentioned when we had our initial interview a year ago, the question was posed to me, you know, how would you approach this? And I'll admit, I'm the outside guy coming in. Even though I've lived here most of my life, I'm new to you folks. My biggest thing is I want to understand. I want to understand the dynamic. I want to understand what's going on. I want to understand how things are working. And then kind of where collectively everybody would like to see this organization and this airport go to, you know, what's our path? So listening, I think, is going to be the key thing, and really trying to get an understanding of where everything is and where we want to go. So if I'm quiet at the beginning, that's why. It's not like I don't have a lot to say. I've got a lot of ideas. I've got a lot of ideas, but I want to listen.
So. Well, thank you for volunteering.
Thank you.
And I'll be in touch with you.
Right. Okay. That was going to be my next thing, but I didn't want to violate a rule, so I was trying to figure out how we were going to contact folks.
It's only after you confirm.
Right.
Then we'll be four.
Yep.
And five.
Five, yeah.
Thanks, everybody.
Andy, you had something.
Yeah, I've got several points here. First off, you are definitely part of the bankruptcy of IGT here, and I would suggest you get a hold of the creditors committee and find out your position on it, then you participate and so forth, because you want to protect yourself as best as possible in such a situation. Does the airport own the land under just the tower there, or do they own the land for these buildings as well?
Well, the city owns the land, and we just have that forever lease.
No, the question was these buildings.
These buildings,
I know,
here,
but
the campus,
but that,
is this part of the airport's?
No, it's not.
No, okay, so it's on the swamp. The swamp is sort of the end.
Swamp is ours.
Okay. But you do own the land under the building of the tower.
Correct. Yeah.
You own the building of the tower.
Yeah, no, but over
the tower structure itself we own, but the building surrounding it we don't.
Okay, they put up that building.
Yeah.
Okay, so, but at least our own rent on the land under the under their building over there. It puts you on the, you should be on the creditors committee, or at least participating in some fashion. I strongly suggest you get in contact with whoever is involved in it. I don't know where.
Thank you. Yeah.
Second thing, my monthly question.
It's not done yet.
It's coming.
We have
October 2nd. We're now 90 days out.
The audit is
October
scheduled.
October 2nd and 3rd.
When are they coming in?
October 2nd and 3rd.
October 2nd and 2?
And 3rd.
And
3rd.
Oh, 3rd.
2nd and
3rd. So November board meeting, we should have a audit report?
I would think so, yeah.
Okay, and the third question then is, three, and then there'll be fourth one. I think is important, and I think that the people that get a hold of your and use your audited report think it's important to have it in a timely fashion. 6 months is not really timely, so my question is, do you think it's a timely fashion to have it 6 months out before you get it? And if you don't, then what are you doing to speed up the process next year?
We're going to look at that. Ordinarily, I would think that October would be a more realistic time frame. It's a function of when the auditors are available and their busy season or not. We're going to look at potentially other firms and other time frames. It's a little difficult with only three board members. With five, we can share some of those responsibilities. So we'll try to move it up, but I think November is not that bad. A month maybe moved up a bit is more realistic, and we'll aim for that as an annual goal.
I think what happened last year is everybody was new, Mary Beth, you know, so that got delayed a little. Now we have a board that, you know, is tiny, and, you know, we're not able to.
Well, over the last 10, 12 years, you've averaged about 180 days for this annual report, for your audited statement to come out, which is just way too long. I think, you know, as an accountant,
yeah.
Mr. Rosenblum, I'm sure you agree with that.
Yeah.
I'm just hoping you have a plan in place to speed this whole thing up.
We'll continue to work on that, yeah. But
yeah, Steve, actually.
What's that?
I was hoping you guys could help me to right or wrong here. This has been bothering me now for about 3 years, and I'm not even sure if you're aware of it. I actually talked to Sandy about this, and she wasn't, so I'm assuming maybe you guys aren't either. But the prior chairman disallowed me from sitting underneath the wing of an airplane, which was the most ridiculous thing I had ever heard in my entire life. But yet, here I am still not able to sit under a wing. It's a part of what I do with my students. And it also gives me the ability to do what I always want to do, which is to talk to the public. I'm already out there anyway, and I want to be accessible to them. So I need to ask you pointedly, do you guys have any problems like the prior chairman did about me sitting under the wing?
Sitting under the wing?
Steve doesn't have a building that he works out of. He works out of his airplane. He talks to people over there. So, you know, I don't have an aversion.
I don't have a problem with that.
Do you?
No.
Yeah. I know you pay your rent. You have your supplies there. I think it's fine.
I'm sorry.
You pay your rent as a tie down. You have a supply box there, and I think that's fine.
Yeah.
But there are spaces available on the property.
We keep telling you.
If you need to.
Yeah, if you want to put it over that side, if you hadn't told me about my fielding, we wouldn't be having this discussion.
No barbecuing, but.
What?
No barbecuing there.
No barbecuing.
I miss the barbecue. I miss them a lot.
All right.
No,
okay. Any other public input? Okay.
Mr. Chair. Not that I want to drag this meeting on any longer, but we heard from Joe, who was very eloquent, and I think maybe we need to hear a few words from Daryl as well.
Oh,
well,
make it quick,
Daryl. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Okay, I'll keep this quick. I know people want to get home. So I'm sure most of you, if not all of you, know I'm Farrell Woods. You know, I've been on the airport since the early 90s. I was first licensed in 1992. But since the early 90s, I was involved in and still am involved in the Skyline Club out on the Electric Ramp. We'll fast forward a little bit. I've been a hangar owner at the airport since 2012. I've based an airplane here since roughly 2004. So I've been at the airport a number of years, and I joined the board, so I can hopefully make a positive contribution to it and help get some good things going on here at the airport, and looking forward to serve.
Thank you, Pat.
Thank you for volunteering. Director's comments.
Want me to go first?
Go ahead. Sure.
I had Griff Delanis also as mentioning. I'm very sad that he's gone. He was a great guy, a lot of fun, and he did contribute a lot to the airport. Yeah. I've been working with John Henry and a group of other airport restaurants to do a restaurant swap. And we're in the we're trying to finalize the stages, but the idea is to get 8 different airports in New Hampshire. The restaurants at those airports will have a punch card. You fly to each airport and you get a punch. Once your card is filled, you get a gift certificate from each airport. So you get a gift certificate to all 8 airports, and as a bonus, once your card is filled, you get entered into a quarterly drawing. So if you fill up all 8 airports in that quarter, your card goes into a drawing, and we're collecting donations from the businesses on each airport. So maybe Steve flies to all 8 airports, and he gets his card punched, and he's in a drawing, and he wins all the fabulous prizes. So it's just hopefully a way to encourage people to fly a little more. I don't need to be busier. As Mike can tell you, service isn't that fabulous lately in midfield, but we're working on it. It's the time of year when things, people go off to college, so we're a little short-handed. Oh, so if anyone wants a job.
They know somebody that wants a job.
Come to midfield. Young Eagles, absolutely, guys, we would love some volunteers, certainly some pilots. Ronnie is hosting it this year. He's really great about stepping up and getting things done, and he has some great ideas. We're hoping to have a couple of the Warbirds guys just put their airplanes out there. Just different things for the kids to look at. As usual, midfield will be providing free food for all the pilots and volunteers, and free ice cream for all the kids who fly. Let's see. President Diffley was president here at the college. He is no longer here. That makes me very sad. He was a great guy, always very helpful. If we needed anything, we could just call up, use the rooms, do whatever. So I wish him the best of luck with that. Midfield also won Best of New Hampshire Breakfast, believe it or not. So we'll be participating in a must have been a good day. So we'll be participating in that on October 12th, and there'll be a magazine out with that in it. I guess that's all I have.
I have 2 items. On Friday of last week, we had an impromptu meeting, coincidental joining of people, including all of the gentlemen, on the subject of aircraft registration fee reform. And the purpose of it was to provide Alderman LeBron, who is also a state representative, language that he could drop into the hopper, a bill to consider, study the process. No decisions were made. We will obviously have to meet and talk about what our position will be on that subject. The other item is that none of us really know what's going to happen with the Daniel Webster College campus. The city of Nashua has expressed its views, clearly wants it to remain here as a university, and I believe it's the airport's view that it should remain as a university, hopefully with an aviation activity. And we would like, I would like to emphasize the benefits of that to the future leadership of that. The president of Southern New Hampshire University has toured the campus area, obviously to make decisions on their bid for the property and also what they're going to do. The bankruptcy court is going to have a lot to say about what happens in the future, but I would think that it should be our position to encourage the retention of Daniel Webster College here, hopefully, and encourage them to get an aviation school going and help them to do that. I believe, if I may quote Alderman Shoneman, he met with the president during his briefing at the city, and I believe you asked him specifically if they had a plan for an aviation program, and then they said they were not thinking about it at that time, and I think over the next months or so, we should make it our business to make it a thought for them. And then the next thing that comes along that is that we want to do everything humanly possible to encourage them to do it. Marketing approaches, packages that we could offer to them to make it more attractive. Alderman Sharman suggested, and I agree, that perhaps we should prepare a letter for you to sign to the president of Southern, invite him down, maybe have him here for a lunch, mm-hmm. let the airport community meet him and talk to them, and let them know what the airport can do for the new Daniel Webster College.
Has anybody thought of contacting all the alumni of Daniel Webster College? I know if it happened in my college, then I'd probably be really interested in hearing about it for those that were the most successful amongst those alumni.
Let's
maybe
put Joe in charge. You're an alumni, right?
There has been there's an alumni Facebook group that has had a lot of discussions on. They even started a GoFundMe page to raise funds in order to buy the college themselves, which was the most
it's my understanding there's a little bit of money owed on the property, right?
Right, there's way too much that goes into it, but there are a lot of people who are passionate on that who are.
It might lead somewhere else.
SNU is supposed to be a commuter college, right?
Right, and I don't think that it's set that they're taking over. I think there's a few different colleges in to bid on the property to take it over, at least my understanding, is that it's not definitely going to be SNU. UNH as well as UND, and I think there's a few other schools that are...
Yep. Southern New Hampshire has made an offer, but I don't know about the others.
I believe right. UNH has too, but I think it was...
One of the articles talked about how they were kind of going to bridge the gap for the students and start direct hiring a lot of the staff too. It almost sounded like they were liquidating.
Well, there's a lot of moving parts and there's a lot of unknowns. I just feel that as an airport, we should make it easy for them to get in here and encourage them and do whatever we can, talk it up, invite the president down, the leadership of the school to come down, again, when we see a little bit of what's happening,
sure,
and welcome them in.
All over the shoulder.
Thanks. I was just going to add that when they did come into the Board of Aldermen to talk about it, gentleman who runs Southern New Hampshire University said that they definitely have an interest in all the engineering programs, all the STEM stuff, and if we can present aviation as kind of a STEM component or aligned with that, I think that I don't think they know too much about it. Mm-hmm. I think they know something about engineering, but I don't think they know much about aviation or the aviation management or the controlling, all that sort of stuff. Mayor Doncha says work with them and talk with them about the importance of it. If they can be made to see that, I think it would help. They have made an offer on the property, but from what he told us, the offer, there's one creditor, and the entire property is 100% collateralized against some debt. And the amount of that debt is way more than the value of the property. So it's going to be a while before the campus is bought.
I like the idea of the airport getting involved and trying to encourage the campus to stay here and keep the aviation and so forth going on. And I think that's another good reason to get involved in the creditors committee so that you have an input with what's going on and can talk about it and talk about the airport and the advantages to keeping the school here.
What they did say, which I don't know if anyone else had heard, but Daniel Webster as a name is going to be gone.
Yeah.
is gone.
It is gone. It's not going to be Daniel Webster College. Maybe someday there'll be, you know, Daniel Webster College as part of, you know, Southern New Hampshire or something like that. Somehow preserve the name, but sadly, the college has been here under that name for all this time. Will not be anymore.
Is that it? Are you all set? Once we have a full board, I'd like to join and participate in that impromptu committee group for reform on the aviation jet
registration
fees. I've been doing a lot of flying the last couple of months. The weather's been great, and I don't normally fly at night, but I did have the opportunity to come back to Nashua when it was nighttime, and I forgot how lovely of a lighting system we have here. That it's really great to see at night. The runway lights are bright, approach lights are terrific, and it just makes me very proud to be sitting here and being able to use the facility. And with that, I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
I'll make a motion to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you all.